All right, guys. Let's get serious, guys.
Oh, serious now face. We have to... Now it's getting real.
Hey, welcome to the Film Podcast. What's up? Greetings. As always, I'm Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Adam Scott.
And today, filling in for Kevin... I was going to say Kevin Smith, but Kevin Smith has nothing to do with this podcast.
It's hard to fill in.
As with every week. It's like he's never here.
Yeah. It's like, that's how it
every
feels.
Every week someone's filling in.
Filling in for Kevin is Brian Finifter.
Hello, everyone.
From another podcast. We'll figure out your name of the podcast before we leave.
We'll figure out how to do this intro.
Our guest today, our official guest, Brian's just a guest host. He's been here a couple times, you know? I don't count you.
I'm getting promoted, is what you're saying.
Okay. You're a recurring regular. Yeah. Well, since semi-recurring.
Yeah, since my normal podcast is going down the tubes, apparently, I need to find a boat to jump off on.
Today we have Trey Stokes.
Hi.
Trey, how are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about you before we get into talking.
Should I step outside?
Step outside. We're going to talk about you.
Okay.
First, Brian told me about it a while ago. I guess it'd be like a web series, Arc, right?
Yeah.
It was picked up by Hulu?
Yes, it's currently on Hulu. Thank you for asking.
And what's that about?
It's like Leno. It's like, thank you for asking that question. Well, let me tell you.
That set of questions.
Yes, really. I understand you went on vacation recently. Yes, I did. I have a funny story about it. It's weird. You should mention. Arc is it's a web series that we did for a company that's now defunct called 60 Frames, which was trying to get into the whole web series business. But we had... it was produced by the producers of 90210 and other things, and we had Renee O'Connor from Xena Warrior Princess as the lead and so on. So it was kind of a semi-professional, extremely low-budget show that we did. And it's like a series of little short episodes, which is because that's what the client wanted. But if you string them together, it's basically one episode.
Okay.
And if you're in America, you can see it on Hulu still. Hulu.com/ARK, A-R-K. That's all you need to know, and you get right to it, or you can search for it. Apologies for the little short episodes. We didn't want them that way, but just watch them straight through and you'll see basically what is one long episode of,
if you watch them all the way through, it's like watching them with commercial breaks, kind of.
Pretty much. It's just a lot of commercial breaks, but it adds up to about 45 minutes. So it's like watching a 1 hour pilot, you know, that's kind of what it was designed to be. So, and, it's been up there for a while. It's been doing really well. And we still to this day, are talking to people about financing to do more of it. I'm having more conversations this week, which just seems to be my life, is to talk about financing that project.
To talk about making things and eventually, maybe, actually,
but
one day make
that's actually how the business is.
But that is Hollywood. Yeah.
The only thing is you need to have had one success, and then you can afford to not work for the 5 years it takes to do all the talking to get the next one going.
Now, can you give us a little synopsis of what Arc is?
Arc is, it's a sci-fi about... some characters, so far in the pilot, you only see a few of them because it was very low budget. Characters who wake up on board what appears to be a giant spaceship of some kind. And they have no freaking clue why they're there. That's the shortest setup I can give you.
I already like it.
And they don't seem to have any reason to. They don't know that they're why they should be. They're from. It turns out they're also the main characters that we meet in the episodes are. They're also from two different time periods. One is an astronaut from 1959, and one is a school teacher from 2008. And they're the bulk of the characters that you see in the first episode. Although there's a couple of other characters do show up. But
very cool.
And that's it. They literally know nothing more than that's what's happening right now. And so it's all about, what is happening? That's kind of the gist of the show, is what's this all about?
That's very cool. That sounds interesting. And now I will be checking it out.
There you go.
Wow. So what, you've done a lot of...
I'm terrible at pitching, but that it seemed to work.
Okay. I'm sold. You've done a lot of special effects, visual effects.
Yes.
Right? I'm just going to ask, what it was your favorite... gig that you did?
Probably the gig that I'm probably proudest of, not at the time, but it's sort of become a thing, is I think Starship Troopers has become a thing that people sort of recognize. We kind of were panned at the time, although we did get nominated for an Oscar for visual effects, because the visual effects at the time were appreciated, but the movie has kind of a camp kind of value that it's come to have over the years, and kind of shows up on dystopian lists from time to time. It might show up, it might get mentioned again. But
it's funny, we literally just talked about that movie last week. We were doing 90s action movies.
Starship Troopers is one of my favorites. I love Starship Troopers.
And I mean, since it came out. It's Paul Verhoeven, so it's like, it's not, I don't think it's campy. I mean, it's campy in the way it should be.
Well, it's satirical.
Well, the whole world has changed since that movie got made. That movie is, you know, pre-9/11.
Yeah.
It's a very different, you know, seeing it in the post-9/11 world with the post-9/11 worldview, you sort of go, oh, this is a very, you know, I kind of see he was going for something that, you know, we didn't even
understand back then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, So that, you know, in terms of just accomplishment, because, you know, we worked really hard on, worked at Tippett Studio, we did all the bug animation. So, you know, that was a heck of a job, and you know, we're all proud of that. The most fun project I think I ever worked on was probably Team America.
Oh.
that's a whole different kind of thing, but that was the most fun to do.
I feel like there was a lot of, like, just dick jokes all day long.
Yeah, and some on screen even.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a lot of puppeteers were female. So
really,
you know, so we had vagina jokes as well.
Oh, well,
well, I'm glad. Very equal opportunity thing.
Now you also worked on RoboCop 2. The best.
I did. Yes.
Was that not a good experience?
No. That was fun. That's how I met Phil Tippett on RoboCop 2, because he did the stop motion animation for it, which later led to Troopers. No one's ever disputed it, so I'm going to say that I do believe that what we did in RoboCop 2 was the first motion capture CG ever in a Hollywood movie.
Oh, wow.
That animated head, that's what I did, and that was real-time motion capture. So,
oh, wow.
That was the first example, I think, that's ever been done in a movie. So,
isn't, what's his name, Noonan, isn't that right? He's a villain in that?
Yeah, that was,
Isn't
it something, something?
Tom Noonan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's Kane.
Yeah.
It's one of those great bits of casting. Well, like, the first RoboCop villain is a guy who then went on to play, like, you know, the dad in that 70s show.
Yeah.
It's very unconventional kind of.
Yeah.
You don't see him as a villain, but he made a great villain, both those guys.
Yeah. Well, even in the movie, you watch him and he's kind of like a little like. He's a psychopath, but he wears glasses and he's kind of balding. Yeah. And you're,
he's
like,
a nerdy psychopath.
Yeah. Right? I'm like, well, that's interesting. All right. Clarence Thomas.
Yeah.
All right, now let's
did you say Clarence Thomas? It's Clarence Boniker.
It's Clarence Thomas.
Clarence Thomas is on the Supreme Court justice. But he is a nerd psychopath.
Well, there you go.
So that is the thread
Clarence
works.
So RoboCop is Clarence what?
Boniker.
That's right.
Clarence Boniker.
All right.
He works for OCP.
He works for Dick Jones.
Cops.
So, speaking of RoboCop, are we excited about RoboCop remake or no?
I haven't paid that much attention. Is that seriously happening? Is that
It's done.
There are photos out now, right?
I guess I'm not excited then.
Yeah,
I haven't paid much attention.
The Guyver than RoboCop.
Yeah.
It looks more like a
S&M suit.
Yeah, it looks more like a leather suit.
Yeah,
than a robotic cyborg kind of a thing.
I'm interested. I like the director.
Who's doing it?
He's the guy who did Enemy Within. He's a Brazilian director. I'm trying to blank here. I'll remember before this is over. and he did a movie. What is it called? The Enemy Within. He did like 2-3 sequels to it. And he's a pretty interesting. He's a good action director. So I'm interested. And then let's talk about the movie I want to talk about. Yes, 2010, Moby Dick.
Oh, I get to ask about it so much.
Yes.
So many questions.
So, first of all, who produced that movie?
Well, this is obviously a setup because I think you know the answer.
The great people.
The fine folks at the asylum. that's an asylum movie, yes indeed.
Now, question.
Yeah.
Are you in good terms, bad terms?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, I dragged you into this, Trey. I had no idea.
It's an ambush. It's an ambush.
You don't have to answer.
After Moby Dick, I was on great terms with them. Since then, I'm not sure if I'm on such a great terms. But the thing about the Asylum folks is, and I have to give them credit for this, they're a great group of guys who run. It's run by three guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're great guys. They're great guys, and they don't really hold grudges, or they're fun, and they, you know, they're not crazy people at all. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's working quite well for them. And you know, I've seen, they invited me to their big
anniversary
party. I just wasn't able to go, but
you know,
last year they had their anniversary, their 10th anniversary celebration, and so on. So I guess I'm on pretty good terms. I don't think they're on bad terms with anybody. Mm-hmm. Those guys.
Now, what was your experience with that? Did you have enough time? How was like the shooting of it?
Oh God, no.
No.
No, there was, it's a given. You know, Moby Dick we shot was 12 days. We shot in 12 days. So, yeah. Take that, Michael Bay. See, you make a feature in 12 days.
Now, what is released, were you happy with that? Is that your cut? Is that, like, their cut? What's up
it's
with that?
A little of both. It's a little of both? The one thing, and it wasn't like we had there was a huge falling out and, you know, threats were exchanged or anything. In the end, it's their movie and it's not my movie. It's as they as the best thing that they said, and it was the most the best piece of advice that, you know, before we started that they could give me, is they said, think of this like you're doing an episode of our television show, which is really the great way to approach it, because it's, you know, if you're an asylum director, it's not like you're going to come in and be, you know, I'm a director, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to deliver the movie they need for their sales and you know, and you can have some creative freedom in there. They'll let you have a lot of free reign as long as you deliver the movie. But in the end, it's going to be their movie. So what happened, the only problem that I had with them on Moby Dick was I spent too long in the editing room. So in the end, they just said, look, we just got to get it done. So they just told the editor, just finish it now. So basically, I will take whatever credit and blame for the first three quarters of the movie, but the last 15 minutes I was not involved in the editing of, and it was a tough setup because there are literally four overlapping storylines going on in the last 15 minutes of the movie. And it was going to be very hard in the editing room to make that clear and make them all interlock, and we didn't really have the time to make that work properly. So it becomes a bit of a mishmash at the end. But up until then, I will say that for considering the budget we had, which was nothing, and the time we had, there's some pretty decent scenes in there, and the reviews, I was very gratified by the reviews we got. You know, the reviews we got ranged from, well, this is terrible, which is not necessarily wrong, but a lot of the reviews came from people who've seen other Asylum movies, and they said, compared to most Asylum movies, this is an Oscar winner. They said, this is the best movie that Asylum has made in years, if ever. And it was like, those are the kind of reviews that I really appreciated.
Yeah. And what's cool that like, people still like, people are like, oh, Asylum makes horrible movies, but what's their next movie coming out? You know,
people are
always still like, let's go to Blockbuster.
Asylum's shtick is the it's so bad it's fun to watch kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a drinking game movie.
Yeah, and not all of their movies rise to even that standard, but I think Moby Dick does in a legitimate way is not a good movie, but it's still a fun movie to watch, and. I had a lot of fun making it because I helped Trey in the process on set and in editing a little bit.
And you were in it?
I was. I got eaten by a whale twice in the span of 5 minutes.
I'm in it. Well, maybe it was your twin. We don't know
that's
that.
That's right. There's twins on board. I'm in it. I did a voiceover. You know, I'm one of the voices. I said, I'm doing a cameo in this for sure. And that's happening. So, and weirdly enough, we shot most of Moby Dick on the same set we shot Ark on.
Oh, really?
It's the exact same set.
Wow. How many years apart was that?
It was two. In fact, we were shooting Moby Dick on that set the day that Ark debuted on Hulu.
Oh, wow.
I remember I was literally uploading Ark to Hulu from the set of Ark.
While we were shooting on it. That's funny. It's a place called Laura Cannon Stage, which if you watch B-movies, you have seen this set.
Yeah.
You know this set.
If you watch the Bushwhack episode of Firefly, the colony ship, they walk around.
It's
a bunch of other things, too.
That set's been standing for over 20 years now, I think, and it gets constantly used.
Wow. Now, I like Asylum because from what I get, I mean, they're not I don't know if they're as good or as bad or whatever you want to call it as what Roger Corman was doing, but they're the only people kind of doing that. Where they're kind of like just constantly,
they're
just
the most prolific.
Stuff.
There are other companies that are in that.
They're
same
doing,
kind of
but these are,
business,
are these are being doing this successfully, and they keep making movies.
And this is what I've said about Asylum ever since we did Moby Dick is, whatever else you want to say about Asylum, they're making a movie every single month. Like we're talking about, okay, so Ark is, and you can say that about 10,000 different projects in this town where things get talked about and just talked about and talked about and talked about. Asylum, whatever their other qualities, they are constantly making three or four movies at a time, and they just don't do that. They're always making something, and that at least I find very admirable.
That was the reason I took the job, is because we'd already we were Arcad was at that time was getting released on Hulu. That was pending, but you know, we'd already made it. It had been making the rounds. We'd been pitching it as a bigger thing, and you know, it was all talk. I literally got a call because I just happened to meet them. I was introduced to the guys at Asylum, and they said, "Yeah, Trey might, you know, maybe we should have Trey do a movie at some point," because they looked at my other stuff, and they said, "Oh, okay." They literally called me up and said, "We actually have a movie coming up. It's a modern version of Moby Dick. Would you like to do it?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, that's, you know, sure, I'd consider that." And they said, "Well, it starts Monday."
You're like, "It's Sunday."
It was a week. They asked a week before. They asked me a week before, and I was like, "I actually said yes before I saw the script, because I was like, sure, well, you know, someone just says, would you like to direct a movie? You say yes. I mean, you know, there's no other answer to that." So, you know, I was like, "Yeah, absolutely. When do I see a script?" A couple days later, I finally got to see the script, which was actually better than I thought it was going to be. Knowing, you know, Asylum's kind of average thing, I was like, "Wow, this is okay." You know, this is actually, that was another advantage we had, is the script was one of their better ones, really, considering their usual, you know, try not to be too insulting here.
Their usual fare.
Yeah, but it was actually much better than I was expecting.
And were you able to? Did you get a chance to kind of, like, give it your own pass, at least within that
There's
week.
A lot of stuff in there that's my own thing. I mean, yeah. I added, you can, they give you freedom to change lines if you run it past them. Like, instead of this, can we do this? You know, like, well, okay, yeah, that's fine. You know, sometimes, you know, there'll be some weird little detail that's like, no, the Asian market needs X, you know, or whatever. And they're very conscious of that. And, you know, and you do have to deliver that. That's part of the job. But within whatever parameters, you have a lot of creative freedom. So there's a lot of little moments and touches and things that we came up with. And then we have to give, we mentioned Renee, we have to shout out to Barry Bostwick. I mean, that was the reason. Barry Bostwick was already cast long before I was part of it, because he wanted to play Ahab, you know. And so I was like, I get to work with Barry Bostwick? That's, you know, how do I say no to that? And he was great. And he was great to work with. And we would, you know, the whole thing was very collaborative. We would rehearse the scenes and, you know, get it. One of the things I tried to do was I tried to get people at least semi-comfortable with all the technical dialogue, so it sounded kind of plausible coming out of everyone's mouth. Some people had a harder time with others, so I would try and make sure we always had time to run the scene, so people, you know, Brian was kind of our naval advisor.
Yeah.
He was the closest
military
we had.
Consultant.
He was the closest we had to anyone with military experience on set, actually. You know.
Which is really, truly sad.
Yeah. How do you salute, and, you know, how do you, you know, when someone, how do you, you know, answer an officer and things like that? And I was always explaining sonar to the, you know, the cast and things like that, so they would understand what they were saying. So all that, you know, is you know, we have total freedom as long as you make the schedule at the end of the day. You know, they give you a lot of freedom.
Very cool. Well, check out ARC on Hulu.com. Is it / ARC?
Yeah, / ARC. That's just ARK and should get you there.
Or just go to Hulu and search ARC.
And search ARC.
done.
There's not that many. You'll get a Stargate episode, but ARC of Truth, but that's also good, I hear. So there you go.
All right. So today we're talking about dystopian futures, dystopian societies, just in general. Kind of bummer subject.
I think just dystopia, because some of this, it's not necessarily in the future. It's just
shitty
reality.
Now. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's true.
Just not a utopia.
Yeah. Anything but a utopia.
I have Wall Street on my list. I mean, does that work?
Two or one?
I was going to say Zero Dark Thirty. Yeah. That's a messed up society you're looking at in that movie.
So before we get into that, any new movies anybody's watched? Did anybody go see Oblivion at all? Anything like that?
I still haven't seen Oblivion.
Everyone's saying that's good. I was not prepared for that reaction.
I wanted to, but we didn't hear any good things. Did you see it?
I saw Oblivion. I wasn't a big fan. I don't know. Like, usually Tom Cruise movies, you know where they're going. They're very predictable, but they're engaging. Like, I connect with them. Like, all right, I know. I forget where it's going because I'm engaged. I don't know.
I did not see the ending of Night and Day coming.
You didn't see that? All right. Well,
that was a real shocker.
Yeah. this was, I was like, I called every single little thing, and then it didn't really surprise me.
That's I've seen, what I've heard from people is people enjoyed it, but they did say, boy, if you know your tropes, you're going to go check. But
I love the world. I love the world that he's set up, you know, and I like the director. He's a visual director.
Yeah, it's supposed to be gorgeous.
Yeah,
right?
it looks amazing.
Yeah.
And, like, the world they set up is amazing. I mean, it's not a nice place, but...
you want to live there.
Yeah, I don't want to live there, but it looks nice. And, all the vehicles look really cool. And, like, they had... I think Tom Cruise designed that, like, hovercraft. because he flies
Cruise
a lot.
Designed it?
Yeah, he helped. He helped. He helped.
Really?
Design it. Yeah. Well, he flies a lot. He's like a pilot, and he makes sure like all the, like it would work. Like,
does he need a vehicle to fly?
He does.
Wow. I didn't think he needed one.
Stars, yeah. Just like us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just designing airplanes. Yeah. Aircrafts.
Well, I just thought he was high enough a level that he could fly on his own.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought, but apparently not. Yeah.
He just, not on screen. That's for that's for home.
Yeah. That's for the privacy of his own home.
I gotcha.
You can't do it in public.
I gotcha.
But anything else? Anything? And Jenny, you saw Evil Dead.
Yeah, I saw Evil Dead.
What did you like it?
I really like the original, and I think you actually said this last time I was here. I missed last week, but I think I've just been spoiled with really good horror movies recently, like Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
And there was just like no, it's definitely a different type of horror. I need that one character that I can relate to. In a horror movie, and this had no characters I could relate to.
It was like Cabin in the Woods without the Bradley Whitford part.
Yeah. I mean,
it seemed
or
like
Fran Kranz with no Fran Kranz.
That's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Fran Kranz. I love him. And there was like no comedy, which I understand they're not supposed to be comedy in horror, but there's always that one thing that
there
like, there's a little
makes
bit.
The horror scary.
There's like that little bit just enough to make it so that you can relate to it and you laugh in between.
Well, yeah, and to throw
jumping.
You off guard for another scare.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like a roller coaster, you know, with like humor and.
But
and
Jane Levy. How do you say her last name?
Levy. Whatever you want.
She.
I'm gonna go with Levy.
Smith.
Yeah.
That one. Mm-hmm. Jane Smith. She was really good. I thought she was awesome in it.
She was really good. Yeah. She was very Linda Blair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From Exorcist. I thought she was great, but everyone else, I'm like, I really can't wait.
Oh,
for you
no,
to die.
Oh yeah, me too. Every single one of them. Didn't like any of them.
Especially that Shiloh guy, because he clearly looks
Shiloh
Hispanic.
Fernandez.
Yeah, he looks Hispanic.
Oh, the one that's supposed to be a brother?
Yeah. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it for what it was.
It was an interesting concept, the way that they did it, that was the reason that they didn't have, like, phones, or that was the reason that they had a keeper in there, in the house. So that whole part with the... Can I say it? I mean, that happens at the beginning of the movie. With the, they're trying to get her to, she's been like, she'd OD'd twice and died already. And so they're trying to go through a cold turkey with meth, I guess.
Yeah. They didn't really specify.
I thought it was heroin.
Really?
You know what? It was probably.
Oh, it was.
It was probably just marijuana.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably just marijuana.
You're okay.
That makes sense.
That is the worst of the lot.
So that was interesting.
Yeah.
And then how they made it seem like she was crazy because she's always done this. So it kind of like that added, like, made it make more sense a little bit.
It was really great setup, just not executed as well as it could have been.
Yeah.
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 But for the expectations I had going in, it was about right. Like, I'm like, oh, this movie's going to be horrible. And
then I
went in and
I
was like,
think
oh,
so, too. I mean, I probably won't go see it again. I probably wouldn't recommend it. But,
I mean, I'll watch
if you
the
need
unrated
to see,
version.
Yeah, yeah. And if you need to see it to go see when they come out with the one that Bruce meets up with them, then you should see it, obviously.
Yeah.
But
till then.
Till then. Let's save it till the end of the movie.
Save it. What if the world ends? What if one of these dystopian futures comes
then
true?
Then it's not worth it.
I hope it's the dystopian
don't waste
future
your
where
time.
Everybody has to watch Evil Dead.
The original?
Like Clockwork Orange style? Yeah. They're like, their eyes are popped open. All right.
I also saw 42.
Oh, you saw 42?
There's a dystopia for you right there.
You didn't tell me that. When did you see it?
Yes, Sunday. Yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me.
Don't tell me how it ends.
Did you like it? Was it
Harrison Ford is his father.
Damn it.
It had really good acting. The dialogue was a little off. But I really, for it being so long, I was engaged the entire time.
How long is it?
I mean, okay, we started at 9:40, it ended at noon.
Midnight.
Okay.
No, noon.
Oh.
We went to a 9:40 a.m. If you go before 11, it's $6 at AMC.
Oh, okay.
So we went to
money, dude.
Yeah. Half price.
Nice.
Yeah. I literally woke up to go see 42.
Set the alarm to go see 42.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You mean midnight?
No.
Yeah.
So imagine doing that for Evil Dead.
Yeah, I know. No way. Like,
you're gonna get some
No, I
get some breakfast and catch Evil Dead. Let's do that.
No, I get home from Evil Dead and I turned on every single light in the house. I had to text my roommate and be like, please don't freak out. But I turned on every light in the house because I'm really scared shitless right now.
But the movie was okay. But
the movie was just okay, but it scared me.
It's my brain that's the problem.
Creepy is creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, it's been like 2-3 weeks since I saw Martyrs, and I want to say, Adam, fuck you, dude. I can't stop thinking about it, dude.
Uh-oh.
You jerk,
so
dude.
So good. Unless you haven't even watched Inside yet.
The French are fucked up, man.
They are fucked up.
Yeah. All right, let's go.
Hold on. I saw Place Beyond the Pines.
Oh, finally.
Oh, you
and
did.
You guys are all smoking crack.
What?
I like half an hour of it, and the rest I was like, I'm ready for this to be over.
Really?
Yeah.
Something
you didn't like
you
the Bradley Cooper part?
Nope.
You don't like
the part with the kids.
Interesting. Oh, but you like the Ryan Gosling part?
Yeah, I like the I like the first half an hour, and then it's like, all right, I'm ready to leave now.
Really?
And then it felt like forever. It felt like 3 hours
I
after
love
that.
I liked it a lot.
I loved it. Yeah.
I don't
I'll go see it again.
He was a very strong character at all.
Something wrong with you, dude.
I liked the kid part though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because no, I like that kid. I hated a lot. Them both. Well, I mean I hated the Bradley Cooper character and I hated
his
kid character.
Yeah.
For a while I was like, oh, we're going to the Kurt Cobain star here? Because it kind of looks like Kurt Cobain a little bit. Dean DeHaan.
No, that's blasphemy.
Yeah.
It was.
So no go.
No.
All right. Well.
Felt sorry. Like it was a 4-hour long movie.
I'm sorry, dude.
It was really pretty.
We tricked you. It looked really nice, yeah.
And Mike Patton's score was awesome.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I never ever need to see it again. Well, I'll watch, if they have just a 1.5-hour long version of it, I'll watch that.
Maybe we'll edit you.
Like the short. Yeah, the short version.
Yeah. We'll cut it into episodes. We'll just have the first one. All right, so let's get into the list. We're talking about what's up.
One other thing, I have a list relevant stream of the week.
Oh, throw it out there.
Hell.
It's streaming on Netflix.
It's streaming on Netflix right now, and it's about a future where the sun has started flaring up and the temperature on the world has gone up by 10 degrees Celsius. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit. Because I never did that transition.
It's
but
more.
It's a lot more.
I know that.
Yeah, so like the planet is dying.
You know, you got to adjust for inflation, so.
Yes.
What year was this
sounds like it could be an asylum movie. It's like a perfect asylum movie.
They would
that movie.
This was last year. This was 2012. It takes place in 2016.
Oh.
And it's like, so the
what?
Yeah.
They're like 4 years from now.
Yeah.
It's That's a solar ridiculous. Flare. It's not global warming. It's a solar flare. So.
I guess, yeah.
Instant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
It was pretty cool. And it's
anybody we know, isn't it? Like
it's a German movie.
Oh. So nobody.
But it was
Hell.
It's produced by Roland Emmerich.
Are you sure they weren't just saying Heil?
Yeah.
I'm Hello? Positive.
Roland Emmerich never gets tired of destroying the world.
He does. Oh, no.
He's the master of that.
Yeah. And now he's going like US for the next movie. And then he's going.
First
he destroyed Shakespeare.
Now he's just like moving from landmark to landmark. Yes. Like he's dialed in on the actual landmarks themselves. So this is the White House, and then the next one will be Mount Everest or something.
Grand Canyon down.
Yeah.
It fills with water.
But yeah. He just
becomes a river.
This one he didn't direct it.
All right. Still the same thing.
Wow.
But it's cool. It's on Instant.
Really
you should
cool.
check it out. It was on Scott Weinberg's.
List?
Top 25 of 2012.
Oh, there you go.
It's literally called Hell.
Hell.
Yeah.
No, not Hell Comes to Frogtown?
Just Hell.
All right. All right. So let's get into the list. Since Trey is a guest, you get first dibs.
Oh, my gosh.
You get to go first.
Well, see, but I have, like you were saying, I have like a whole list of lists here.
Well, that way you
so
go
many,
first.
I was hoping like other ones could, everybody else could like say one. I go, oh, okay, I can cross that one off.
Yeah.
Well, that's going
to
happen a lot, I feel.
That,
in this
that happens.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
don't worry. That happens.
Don't worry.
Well, but see, I haven't qualified like which of the five I would actually pick if I had to pick the five.
So we'll start with your number five and we'll work our way down.
Well, but see, I've got 10 on this list.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
I told him. I told him it was a five. I told him.
Got too many. Okay, I'll go with an easy one. It's one that I'm sure is on my five. I'm not going to put them in any kind of preference, but in terms of. And we're talking about dystopian movies, just a movie that's set in a dystopia, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, I would say one of my favorite movies of last year, I call dibs, Dread.
It's not actually on my list. He's expecting that to be on my list.
You weren't that
about?
Big on Dread, but
you don't want to live in that world.
if I can be a judge, maybe. Okay.
Yeah.
If I can get one of those cool guns and wear that helmet. I thought
a lawgiver.
Yeah, exactly.
So did we all see it here? Brian,
yeah,
did you see it?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought, you know, I thought it was a very entertaining movie. I'm talking about, you know, we're talking about the movie itself. I was just completely entertained by, mm-hmm. As we said on that other podcast that Brian and I do sometimes.
Well, let's name it. And then it's going through a name change, but it used to be called.
It used to be called Down in Front. And yeah. Right now we're going through a brand change.
Rebranding, as we say, in D-Spag world.
So the name moving forward will probably be Friends in Your Head.
Okay.
Yeah, and that'll be like our umbrella term. So like we started doing Down in Front, and then we added an intermission, which kind of like a second sister podcast. Mm-hmm. So Friends in Your Head will kind of be the umbrella, and then we're going to keep doing
intermission,
and then maybe other shows as well. So, but Friends in Your Head will be so the big
thematically,
yeah, you know, under the overall
one
thing.
Umbrella or the other.
Yeah.
So we covered Dread in that one on that show, and because we were doing it was why I watched it. I didn't really make much effort to watch it. Otherwise, I'd better check this out. And I was just totally enthralled by it. It's just a fun, crazy, you know, super violent movie. It's as I said on the show at the time, just it's a repeat if I say it here. But you know, Quentin Tarantino like does his fan film of a grindhouse movie. Dread is a grindhouse movie.
Yeah,
it just has more of a budget than most grindhouse movies ever had. But it's just meant to just we're just strap in. We're going to tell the story and. I guess there's two kinds of dystopian movies, I guess you could say. There's the dystopian movie that takes place in a dystopia.
Yeah.
And then there's the movie that's about overthrowing or fixing the dystopia. And Dread is very much the former. It's just about this is a messed up world and here's a messed up day that this guy has. That's all it is. It's all it intends to be. And I found it thoroughly entertaining, you know, as a thrill ride and worked great for me. So.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting that. I mean, I went because I'm a fan of Carl Urban. Right. I like the writer, and I had heard horrible things about this movie when it was in production. Like, I know one of the first director got fired, so I guess the guy who finished it is the guy who got credit, but he had already filmed like half of it, so there was a bunch of production problems they had, and I'm glad.
Yeah, well, it's amazingly cohesive. Trey's saying, it's a perfect example of the genre, and it doesn't rise above that, but it's not intending to. But it's just everything that they set up, they pay off more or less. I mean, we had like one or two nitpicks, but really nothing major. It's just a great example of that. And like just a great example of the form done straightforwardly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just kept going. That's the good thing. It didn't slow down at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just kept going. And I like all the actors in it. I was surprised to see Lena Headley?
Headley.
She's amazing.
She's, you know, it's actually made me, between that and Game of Thrones, it's made me retroactively go back and start checking out Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yeah.
I was
a big fan. And like, oh, look at that. She was good in that too. Who knew? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's
fantastic. That was actually a good show. Like, I like that show better than I do any of the sequels, the Terminator sequels. The show was just fun.
You mean after two?
Yes, yeah, of course, yeah.
Really.
I don't count
three. It's a sequel.
It's one movie, dude. It's he thought of it previously in his head. He just couldn't do it, you know, episode two.
They feel like very different movies. So.
Yeah. But yeah, Dread is amazing. I loved it. Everybody here agrees, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are all on board.
Yeah.
I love all the scenes with the drugs. The slow-mo drug, that was fantastically
done. The prettiest blood ever.
Yeah, seriously.
The visual effects that they, you know, the visual style they gave to that high feeling is amazing. That whole like spectral rainbow quality overexposed.
You can totally understand if that was your world. I would get high too. I would totally take that drug.
Yeah.
Why not?
And some people that I've heard like kind of like write about RoboCop. Have said that that's kind of the feel that they're going for.
It definitely had that vibe. For me, it felt like a twin of Escape from New York was the tone that I felt it matched the closest. But yeah, obviously RoboCop.
Wait, were you talking about the new RoboCop?
Well, that's what the new RoboCop wants to kind of be like. The new Dread. They want to copy that style.
Okay.
Just very pulpy and kind of. Yeah. It was just such a good movie. I.
Except that's a movie. Of course, it tanked so hard.
I know,
yeah.
And it's funny because everybody who did see it is like, we want a sequel, and they're not going to make a sequel.
Our friend Mike, the third guy on our podcast, evangelized is not too strong a word to use in terms of he really tried to get his because he saw it in the theater and was coming from the same angle of this will probably suck. Yeah. Came out, liked it a lot, and just really. Tried hard to get as many people as he could to see it.
So you guys did both. You watched it.
We watched it. Yeah, we only watched it because we were gonna because Mike wanted to do it so badly for the podcast specifically because he had loved it so much.
Oh, that sucks.
So we both missed it in the theater.
It was. Oh, it was awesome. Yeah, I'm really glad I saw it in theaters.
I don't usually go see 3D stuff, but this was only the time I wanted to go see it was only playing 3D. So I'm like, oh, screw it, I have to pay the extra money, and if it's horrible, I'm gonna regret this. But I went and I was really inebriated at the time, and it even made it better. Like, I mean, the 3D did. Like, I'm like, what the hell is this drug? What's going on?
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't see it in 3D. It was on the big screen was good enough for me. I'm done with 3D.
I am too, but I had to see it in 3D. Or else I had to wait for the next day.
No choice. Or else it was D-Box.
Yeah. All right. So, Brian?
My number five is They Live. Another genre example, yeah.
Put these glasses on.
Yeah.
Put them on.
No.
Put them on.
No.
20 minutes later.
Which, it's the only example on mine that is not a science fiction, as you know, a futuristic. Yeah, this is a period in time in the future. But it's just like, and I came to it relatively late, like in college. And some friend was like, we've got to watch, this is the most hilarious, amazing movie of all time. And just, it's one of the greatest, like, takedowns of the actual dystopia that our society is, and its consumerism, obsession, and all of that. Mm-hmm. And it just lays it out bare in the same kind of way that South Park is really great in just taking these absurdities of our modern society and just laying them out really simply for how moronic they are. They Live also does that in a really wonderful way. And just like, this is what all this stuff actually is. And it literally just shows you that through its magic bean glasses. And it's brilliant in the way that it does that. We were at Comic-Con, was it this last year or the year before? My favorite Comic-Con costumes I have ever seen in my entire life were two people dressed as the aliens from They Live with the giant swag bags over their shoulder that were, you know, in the gray that just said consume and obey on them.
Yeah.
And they would just walk up and down the aisles. It was amazing. Oh my God. That's my favorite costumes ever.
Some of the costumes are very clever. Like, I like the ones that you kind of have to do a double take where you're like, no, that's not that. Oh, wait a minute. He's totally doing that. Yeah. Very cool. I like the movie. It's one I don't see that often, but
I haven't watched it in a while. It's making me want to maybe check it out again.
I'm just checking over my older lists, and I can't believe I haven't had it on anything else. I thought I did, so I didn't even think of including it on this.
Oh, really?
List. But I love this movie. I used to watch it all the time. This and Alien Nation, the TV series.
Yeah.
I grew up on.
Right.
I caught a little bit of Alien Nation, the TV show, growing up. Yeah. I don't think I ever even realized that it was a movie first.
There was just this something about the 80s and aliens. I was all up into aliens.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody was in the 80s.
Yeah. Special time.
Yeah, it's just like time for aliens. Everyone's like, man, we love these fucking aliens, but we fear them.
That's right.
E.T. I just watched E.T., by the way. I love that movie.
For the first time?
No, on Blu-ray.
I just got it
on Blu-ray, and that's a good. They put the shotguns back in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
I'm glad.
Did they take out him running in the beginning? That totally ruins his reveal later on.
I don't remember.
Because to me, frankly, that's a worse transgression than the walkie-talkies. Quite honestly.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, Spielberg has this great classic, his 80s master form of building up to an amazing reveal. And then the stuff that he put in later in the early 2000s.
Oh, no. Yeah, I know exactly the scene you're talking about. No, it's not there anymore.
So okay.
This is the original.
Yeah, it's the original.
Good.
Great. Get that in Blu-ray if you get a chance.
I came to kick ass and chew bubble gum.
And I'm all out of bubble gum.
Greatest line.
Oh, Carpenter.
All right, Jenny, what is your number five?
Okay, so my number five is 1984's Red Dawn.
Ooh. Oh, interesting.
Oh.
Yes. I actually just saw this movie for the first time last year because I wanted to see it before the new one, and then I ended up not going to see the new one because I heard how awful it was. So it didn't matter anyways.
But it did because you saw the good one.
Yeah, I did, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. I guess I could do the synopsis part of it. Let's see. It is the dawn of World War III in Midwestern America. A group of teenagers bands together to defend their town and their country from invading Soviet forces. So the dystopian future is there. Who is it?
It's a dystopian past. It's our Cold
War
past.
The they're against the, who is it, the Chinese?
The original?
The original is the Russians. And the new one is North Koreans, right?
The new one was going to be the Chinese.
It was going to be the Chinese. That's what it was, but it turned into Korea.
China's our biggest movie market. So that's right. Somehow the North Koreans invade North America.
Which is really hilarious now that the North Koreans are actually threatening to invade and
they can't even invade South Korea.
And the entire rest of the world is going, guys, just shut up already. Just shut up.
Are they still talking over there?
I just love the amazing racism of like, oh yeah, no, all Asian people look the same. It's okay.
Yeah.
Chinese, North Korean, doesn't matter.
Yeah. Whatever.
No, we'll just change the country.
No difference.
Just change the flag. Just change the flag.
CGI
the flag.
Just
change the
flag.
Yeah, the flag.
We're good to go.
Dub some lines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw the remake.
Did you see it?
I just pictured John Milius standing at like the front door of the theater saying, "Avenge me.
Avenge me, boys."
Like Harry Dean Stanton. Yeah, right. I loved the last like minute of the movie when they're like invading this camp.
When it ended?
Well, yeah. the thing is, the tone of it was very like
the stinger with Bruce Campbell.
The post credit sequence where they eat shawarma.
It's Sam Jackson shows up and he recruits them.
Of course.
No, it's this like the whole movie. The whole tone was like this, like MTV like tone to it, where the original wasn't. It was like this, like very serious, like. They had to grow up. I mean,
that's a dark movie. The original,
it's a really dark movie.
That's a dark, especially the ending. Holy mackerel!
Does the remake have the hunting scene?
When they take
C. Thomas Howell hunting and he drinks the blood.
They have it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and they kind of like make it funny, but the serious scene about Milius is pissed then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the whole movie was very like MTV-ish, but the last like minute or two of the movie is they're like trying to break out these prisoners from the camp, and like you see like the prisoners kind of like they pick up a flag, American flag, and they're running through it, and it's very almost like an American Revolution type of
feel to it. Playing America Fuck Yeah.
Yeah, and they should have, and that's a tone, like, I'm like, that's what the tone that the whole movie should have been, but they were like, meh, we have Tom Cruise's son in it. it was not a fun movie, but the original, yes. It's a great movie. Powers Booth is in it. That's all you need to know.
C. Thomas Howell is a badass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, how often do you get to say that?
Much.
Leah Thompson?
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah.
C. Thomas Howell just straight up shoots. Is it Leif Garrett that's in that? No. Yeah, it is him.
Is that Leif Garrett?
Is it Leif Garrett?
I don't think it's Leif Garrett.
No, maybe I'm thinking of The Outsiders.
It was Tom Cruise. It was Rob Lowe.
Yeah. Well, Patrick Swayze is also in that. So.
I mean, C. Thomas Howell does straight up murder a bunch of people.
He does. Yeah. Yeah,
and laughs and like enjoys it.
I hadn't watched Red Dawn in a long time, and within the past 2 years or so, it happened to be on cable, and I was like, wow, yeah, I remember liking it at the time, but then it kind of became like, oh yeah, Red Dawn is such a Cold War relic. It's kind of, and I watched it, and I was like, this movie's awesome. This movie is still great.
Yeah,
you know, and it's really interesting as a weird time capsule of, you know, it's definitely of its time.
Yeah.
But that idea of the Russians could invade us. I mean, that was very much, you know, in the Reagan era was like, those fucking Russians, you don't know what they're going to do. They're going to be any second. So, you know, it was very much about the mood of the country at the time.
Yeah.
And just so hard right wing.
Yeah.
Like, I love the scene. Like, no, we have to have this in here. Where they go to the gun stores and they collect all the papers.
They literally say, go to the gun registrations. That will tell you who has guns. They literally say that they...
That's Milius, boy. He's got the scene where you see the dead body with the gun in his hand, and they pull the gun out of it, and in the background you see the bumper sticker that says, you can have my gun, you take it from my cold.
A little bit much that moment, but okay, I'll allow it. But it's a dark movie. And then at the end, I don't know if I was really... The real gut punch for me is the ending of Red Dawn, the original Red Dawn, when it all just becomes history.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and now it's a historical marker. You know, and they already set that up earlier by saying, you know, these having a historical marker about Teddy Roosevelt and no one even knows what that means anymore. Yeah. But it's like, now all that becomes a historical marker for someone to go, oh, look, something happened here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty dark stuff.
It is. I like how dark it is. And also, like, there were some serious, like, like great moments of like acting from these people who you don't now.
Patrick
like
Swayze's great in it.
There's a scene with Patrick Swayze and
Charlie Sheen.
Yeah. They're like in like a little wheat field, and they're talking about if they're doing what they're doing is right, and it's serious. And even now, like I rewatched it before I watched the remake, and I'm like, man, I'm getting a little. Why is Charlie Sheen making me cry?
When's the last time that happened?
Yeah. Minute work.
Yeah. All right, so that was your number five.
Good choice.
Yeah, my number five is a little. It's a two-way tie. It's Fahrenheit 451.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And Equilibrium.
All right.
So the Equilibrium
emotions
is kind
versus
of
books.
Yeah, yeah.
Equilibrium is the Gunkata movie, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Which is really hard to say with a straight face.
Yeah.
Notice the restraint I'm demonstrating right now.
Yeah.
All right.
It's all about Christian Bale for me in that movie.
I'm not gonna lie. I love this movie, but I'm with Brian. It's really hard to say Gunkata with a straight face. I don't even think I can do it most of the time, especially since I've been drinking.
I think that's what they say when they take pictures. They like say Gunkata, Gunkata,
and everyone can't help but smile.
But yeah, Fahrenheit 451 is just it's a great piece of literature. Besides the fact that I like the movie. It's Francois Truffaut. I think it's one of the very few, I think it might be the only American film he did, like English-speaking film.
Isn't Wild Child English?
I don't know. Sure. I don't know. Look that up. It might be one of two then. But Equilibrium kind of had that weird vibe, like Fahrenheit 451. Yeah. And besides the whole Gunkata thing, it was a fun movie. And like there's some really cool actors. Sean Bean is in it, if you're a fan of Game of Thrones.
Spoiler, he died.
Yeah. He doesn't make it.
Maybe I need to go back and rewatch Gunkata, the movie. Equilibrium.
Yeah.
I watched it in film school, I think, you know, when one of my classmates lent it to me. And just went, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen, and have not thought about it since. So maybe I got it totally wrong.
I saw it in theaters.
Okay.
It was a time where I was watching anything. Like, right. I'm like, I'll go see anything.
And that's different from
I
now.
I also saw it in theaters. And I think I went and saw it with Brandon Strelitz, our friend.
He loves this movie.
He does love this movie.
And he also loves Fahrenheit 451, surprisingly. So maybe that's where I'm getting it. Oh yeah.
They're very similar.
I see why you put them together. Yeah. There is a similarity there.
I don't hate Equilibrium, but it is silly.
Yeah, no. Yeah. That's why I couldn't put it on its own as my number five, so I had to add a little something to it with Fahrenheit 451.
You had to leaven it.
You had to class it up, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
So you know how ridiculous that movie is.
Oh, yeah,
so you class
it
up.
Yeah.
All right.
That's why I made it a two way tie there.
All right.
His face falls off and lands on the floor.
Is that Fahrenheit 451 or is that Equilibrium? I don't remember that from Fahrenheit 451.
It's Equilibrium.
Yeah. William, is it Fichtner? Fichtner. He's in this.
Yeah.
He plays the leader of the revolution.
Sean Bean.
Yeah.
Sean Bean, yeah.
He's in everything.
T. Diggs. Who's the woman? It's not Emily Mortimer, no?
Emily Watson.
Emily Watson, yeah.
But what's his name? Angus McFadden.
He's pretty creepy.
I really like him in general.
Yeah, he's a good actor. Very cool. So that's my number five, two-way tie.
I guess that means it's my turn.
Yeah.
Okay. So I decided for this list that I really wanted to try to use movies that I have not used, like not even as honorable mentions before.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's
ballsy.
So hard difficulty. Mode.
It's gonna be tough.
Hard mode, yeah.
It's gonna be tough. And I'm also gonna cheat a little bit.
So it's gonna be really hard mode. And also I'm not also gonna cheating. Do it.
No, I'm gonna do it.
Okay.
This my number five is by no means a great movie.
Okay.
All right.
But my cousin is in it.
What? Okay.
My cousin's a stuntman.
Okay. Didn't know that.
It's this. It's from 1993, and it is called Firepower.
Wait a minute. Ooh. Is it the sequel to Firestarter?
No.
All right.
But it should be.
This is about a dystopian future where crime has gotten so like it's kind of like the inverse of Escape from New York, where it's like, rather than putting all the criminals on an island, they put a wall around the city of Los Angeles, and they're just like, all right, well, once you go past this wall, like once you go past the Third Street Tunnel, you're in the crime zone.
Oh. Yeah.
And you're on your own.
That's just how it is right now. Again, we live in a dystopia. Yeah. We don't even know
But in the crime zone, they have these organized fights to the death. Huh. In this arena where they have weapons around the arena. But so you might
it's a little bit of Best of the Best then.
A little bit of Best of the Best. But with the Ultimate Warrior in it as the swordsman.
What?
Yeah.
The Ultimate Warrior?
The Ultimate Warrior.
Really?
Is in this movie. And it's the characters have great names like Nick Sledge.
Is he right wing in that as well?
Beef McLarge Huge.
Nick Sledge and Darren Braniff. And they're these
Chuck Steak.
They're the two partners. And they have to go undercover outside into the what is it called? Like the dead zone or something like that. The Hell Zone.
Hell Zone.
Into the Hell Zone. They have to go undercover into the Hell Zone to somehow bring down this ring of criminals, which doesn't matter because it's in the Hell Zone.
Wow.
So this is kind of like a little bit like Doomsday.
It sounds like Doomsday.
Honestly, Doomsday is one of the few movies I fell asleep during.
Wow.
Like, we went to see that movie and we got drunk. And we're like, this is going to be awesome. We're going to be drunk. We're going to see Doomsday. Fell asleep 5 minutes into it.
Wow.
And not because I was drunk, because it was boring. I was just like, I'm out.
Yeah.
I woke up for the credits.
Yeah, like, credits were amazing.
Yeah,
credits
were awesome. So good.
They rolled at a, like, perfect pace.
Yeah, I could read them clearly.
Sometimes they go
while inebriated.
That's the mark of good credits.
And they weren't too slow. It was like, all right, well, now I know. Okay. Yeah. Oh,
sure. Sometimes you get too bored with credits. You're like, I'm tired of watching, you know.
But I want to be able to read who was the best boy, and who was the grip,
and
all the thank yous. Because if they were worth thanking, then clearly I should
and
know.
And your cousin was one of the credits.
In Firepower, he was one of the credits. He was in Stuntman. He was in one of the fights. I don't think it was with the Ultimate Warrior. I think it was with someone else.
Well.
But like, they have weird nicknames when they go undercover into the fighting world. Like, the main guy's name is Alley Cat.
Oh, wow.
Or something like that. It's so silly. Wow. And it's like, it's all rigged. So it's like, oh, we're not going to let them, because they have weapons. Like, oh, the weapons are activated, but then they don't release the weapons, and so they let people get killed because they go to get a weapon, but they say it's released, but it's not. It's fun and stupid, and it's from 1993. And if you can find it on DVD, God bless you.
Firepower.
I had a VHS copy that my cousin gave me, like a VHS screener. This is how long ago this movie
was. Yeah, how old is this movie?
1993.
93, wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
But it's so much fun, so dumb.
What is it called again?
Firepower.
Firepower. All right. Not a sequel to Firestar, guys.
Not a sequel.
All right, Trey, what did you have before?
Now, again, since I'm the new guy here, I just want to stress again, these are in no particular order.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize that was part of the game. So, then I'll just throw out one. I'm talking about dystopian movies and movies that we like and so on. I'm going to go with Serenity. I'll put Serenity up on the table for that.
Very cool.
Very much about the overthrow of the dystopia, obviously. Yep. The opposite side of the coin from Dread. But
I still disagree that the Alliance is the bad guy.
Exactly. Yeah, that's as we like to tease Brian with, you know, the true genius of the whole Firefly universe is they made Star Trek the bad guys, which is, you know, a great way to, you know, come up with a different take on science fiction for television. It's like, what if Star Trek was the bad guys? Oh, that's great. I love it. Let's make a TV show about that. And all those, like, lawless people out on the frontier that the Star Trek guys are always having to go corral, let's make those our heroes. They're causing trouble again.
That's what Firefly is.
That's what Firefly is.
Do you like Firefly, Brian?
I do. I do like Firefly, though at the end of the day, I do fundamentally disagree with the themes and the identity of it.
Brian thinks we should make people better.
I do.
I
think better is a good thing.
So he doesn't.
You're one of those.
It just doesn't count it as a dystopia. It literally is your utopia for you. It's not a dystopia.
Yeah. Well, I mean, minus the silly hats, but yeah.
Sure.
Oh. Yeah.
Very cool.
But, you know, I mean,
good to know that that's what you think, Brian.
Yeah, but
you're on a list now.
We're going to keep an eye on you.
Yeah, exactly. So watch out when the revolution comes and the civil war begins.
Yeah.
We know who's going to be on what side.
Wait,
we know who the rat is.
That meme, though, where it's like they talk about there's the picture of Star Trek and the picture of the Road Warrior. Well, I'm not stepping on anybody's list here, but it's like one is. This is communism in the future, and this is libertarianism in the future.
Yes, exactly.
So, I mean, I guess on that standpoint, I guess I'm with you between the Road Warrior and Star Trek. I'm going
to
go with Star
Trek. There's totally
Road
an argument to be Trek. Made for Star Trek to be a dystopia, and Star Trek is totally, like, legitimately socialist in its, you know, in the setup that it has.
Yeah. But it's social, and I had this argument with someone else. You know, Star Trek, you know, a lot of people, conservatives, will go, yeah, it's some kind of socialist, you know, ridiculous utopia that can't possibly happen. It's like, well, but that's because it's not we just suddenly figured out how to make socialism work in Star Trek. Yeah. It's we have universal energy and universal – we have the replicator where there's no scarcity of anything.
Yeah.
So we can have socialism now.
Right. Yeah.
You and I give you free food. I'm not taking it from someone else now. That's why their socialism works. So it's not you know, it's not like we just decided socialism worked and you know.
Which so it, that's the problem. So they had needed that. They needed replicator.
Yeah. Replicator. If you have unlimited energy and unlimited resources – socialism sounds really good.
Yeah, that's
and it'll work.
That's literally the distinction to be made is, you know, if you're operating under scarcity economics in which you have more people than stuff, then you need some kind of economic system to move all of that around in the best possible way. If you have more stuff than people, everybody's fine.
Yeah, that's right.
Nobody any issues with anything.
Everything's cool.
Yeah.
So
what you're saying is we have too many people.
Yes, I am.
So, do we need to get rid of them?
Somehow, yes.
So maybe some of the movies on our list will give clues as to how we could go about it.
Maybe it just took a dark turn.
Battle Royale?
I think going back to...
Dude.
Going back to Serenity, as fast as possible, is I think, well, one of the things about Serenity and the whole worldview of that is Serenity has the idea that, yes, there is a utopia, but there is a dark underbelly that utopia is maintaining. And the whole argument of, well... is this right or wrong? I mean, is it, you know, this is, you know, again, it's the anti-Star Trek because I don't think you could sum up Serenity by saying the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. They say the opposite. They think, no, screw that. You know, it's all about the individual. So it's, you know, it's definitely, it talks about, you know, it's a movie that definitely addresses issues of utopia versus dystopia and how they can be the same thing depending on your point of view.
Now, have you seen the series when you watched the movie?
Yeah, I was a big fan of the series already. I can't claim total cred. Like, I watched it when it was on Fox. I discovered it on DVD, but I was a fan of the series long before the movie came out. Yeah,
I went in totally blind.
Me too.
Like, I had no idea. I was like, what is this thing?
Yeah.
And I've always been interested. I kind of wish that I could have that experience. I wonder what it's like to see Serenity without knowing.
It was amazing. I don't know. Like, because we had just moved to Long Beach and it just came out. And we were like, oh, hey, there's a movie theater right down the way. Let's go check out this movie. This looks cool. And I loved it. And I was blown away. Yeah. But as much as I love Serenity, I feel really bad because I still haven't watched any episodes of Firefly.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Wow. Okay. Oh, wow.
Wow.
Like, I need to. I've seen, like, bits and pieces of stuff. My list of shows I need to watch is so...
It's only 12 episodes. It's so short.
That doesn't matter. My
you
list
can do
of
it
shows.
In like a day.
Yeah, see, I'm like, I've never seen Buffy, but I don't have that kind of time.
Yeah,
but,
that's my problem with Buffy. Yeah, I don't have that kind of time.
That's a marriage. Firefly is a fling.
Exactly. Firefly is a weekend. It's a wild weekend. That's you can get it done.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was about to say. Well, I mean, right now I don't. Yeah. After like May, I could devote a weekend to Firefly.
Well, it's definitely worth it. It's if you like Serenity, you will. I think you will enjoy.
Yeah,
Firefly
I don't foresee myself disliking it. I feel really bad. It's a constant source of hurt.
I'm glad that you know that it can stand alone because obviously I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell if it would stand alone.
Oh yeah, I love
that. That's
how
I thought. Someone dragged me to go see Serenity, and I'm like, what is this? What are we going to see? Star Trek, dude. And
why would you complain about a Star Trek movie?
I don't see the where's the reluctance coming.
So I went to go see it, and I was like blown away, and I'm like, wait a minute, there's a TV show that. That's before this. It's like, yeah. So it was really cool to see that, like, the prequel kind of to because if you watch the show in its entirety, it feels like a prequel movie to me.
I still don't even understand how the whole show and the movie work together. So, like, do they rescue her? Because is River in the show?
Yeah.
So they rescue her before the movie.
The rescue of River is the scene that the show never showed you, but it's how the show starts.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So like, I watched the beginning of the movie.
But you never actually saw him
then
do the
I watched
rescue
the
show, on the
show. Then I watched the rest of the movie.
You watched the first 5 minutes of the movie, then you watched the series, then you can watch the rest of the movie.
I got you. That's cool.
Yeah. It's a really cool movie.
I was sold right away. And then as soon as the Reavers... show up. I was like, what the fuck? That was awesome and scary. I love it.
What the hell? Yeah.
Yeah. And again, like, because I hadn't seen the show and I didn't know about them. So it was
a surprise.
What the hell? Yeah. It was such a good movie.
See, I actually like the Reavers a lot better in the show than the movie. I think they do too much with the Reavers, or they throw the Reavers too much into
the
spotlight.
Well, the Reavers are not in the show, you know.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. they're more like this abstract.
About. Joss Whedon referred to them as the greatest villain I never wrote because we'll get to them, but right now that we're just keeping them off camera, so we don't have to worry about what they are yet.
And I like the villain Chiwetel Ejiofor is just badass in that.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah. Brian?
My number four is, I believe it is Idiocracy, which I would be surprised if it's not on any of your lists. But
going for the comedy.
Yeah, well, I mean, just one of the greatest.
It's got electrolytes.
Electrolytes is what plants crave. What is
Morgan McCosker? I love you.
That's probably my favorite bit from the whole thing, because it's just like, it still makes me uncomfortable every time I think about this movie, how just dead on it feels in terms of, if you take everything in our society right now and take it to the logical extreme, that is what you end up with.
Yeah, I don't see this as fiction. I see this as foretelling the future. I'm like, all right, I hope I'm dead before this happens.
I see more and more people just, you know, pointing to something in current events and going, Idiocracy!
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, there's very much a literally unbelievable Poe's Law aspect to Idiocracy, where it's like, this is... We already have stuff, and every day it seems like there's something else that I can't tell whether this is actually happening or an Idiocracy prequel. The hairs are so fine to split. So yeah, just every one of the better satirical deconstructions of modern society, and doing exactly what satire, you know, theoretically is, you know, the construction of satire is supposed to be, which is take one aspect of, actually, satire and science fiction, take one aspect of modern society, or take modern society and then just take it to the absurd extreme and then see what you get. And to me, Idiocracy does that brilliantly with so many aspects of our society.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, I don't know why I know why it tanked, because that's... We have a bunch of idiots not going to see them.
I think it's a conspiracy.
Yeah.
They want, that's what they want.
Yeah.
They want us to be dumb.
Yeah.
It also follows from an actual true, you know, logical fact that is terribly scary. The fact that dumb people breed more than smart people breed. And
it's
what
been
that.
Thoroughly was, discredited that theory.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, maybe not then. But.
Wait, who discredited that theory?
Just real world.
Oh, I don't know. It's like see it in action every day.
Well, there's, you know, we're talking about genetics. We're not talking about society. I mean, if you educate people to be dumb and stupid and ignorant,
right.
Or, then that's fine. Obviously, that can work constantly. But the idea that dumb people have dumb children, therefore the IQ of the species actually goes down. There's no.
Oh, no. Not in the same not, way. In the not same the way, IQ. Yeah, not genetic IQ, but in terms
society
of.
Society can certainly make you
the less
stupid
education
and frightening
you
and ignorant. There's no doubt about that.
The less education you have, the more likely you are to have children in a situation in which you should probably not have children. Hmm. And if you're not economically stable enough or whatever to have children.
There was I wonder, and I have to make a confession here, I've never seen Idiocracy, but heard about it, and I'm certainly aware of what it is, and I've seen enough, you know, clips and memes and things like that that I have a fairly, you know, clear picture of it. I just never gotten around to see it. Does it actually say that it's based on the Marching Morons, or is it just happened to kind of be sort of like the Marching Morons?
Which I don't know.
Marching Morons is a famous golden era science fiction story that basically puts this out. That flat out says... Dumb people had kids, smart people didn't have kids, and everyone got stupid. But it's a serious science fiction story. But it's a famous science fiction story called the Marching Morons, which is about a guy from the past who is frozen, wakes up in this future world where he's a super genius compared to everyone else, and he becomes the king. But it turns out there is this little small secret society of people who aren't stupid. You know, when the world began to go to hell, this, you know, smart people like banded together and have a secret underground society of smart people who actually run the world. The dumb people think they run the world, but it's actually the cabal of smart people that are running the world.
I want to read this now.
Yeah, it's golden age. It's called The Marching Morons, and it gets its title from. They said, you know, the guy from the past is like, well, you know, why don't you just get rid of them? And he goes, there's billions of them. You know, it's based on the problem of the marching Chinese, which is if, you know, if the mathematics would be like if all of China lined up four across and marched past, you know, the center of Peking Square or any place, you know, pick a point, an arbitrary point, and you know, anyone over the age of 18 in China, you had to march past it one time in your life, they would never stop.
Yeah.
So the idea is...
I've heard it as, if you had 100 Chinese walk into the ocean, you know, shoulder to shoulder, you would never run out of Chinese.
Exactly.
People.
So the idea is how do we get rid of 10 billion of these people? You know, it's like, how do we erase the slate when there's that many of them? So as I recall, it's been decades since I read that story, but the guy from the past just happens to work in advertising, which is a skill that's been lost. And so he's like, you have to make them want to kill themselves. and so he, with his old world knowledge of advertising, helps solve the problem of what to do with the billions and billions of idiots by coercing them into wanting to do the thing that kills them. So
it's like Mad Men meets Idiocracy.
Mad Men meets Idiocracy. Yeah,
it's a whole darker turn.
Whenever I've heard about Idiocracy, I always think, now is that literally based on the Marching Morons, or is it just in the same kind of concept?
Yeah, it's nothing more. I mean, that writer's not credited.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that that it should be. It's just it's an idea that's kind of out there. But the whole concept of the species will get dumber was definitely very much
as tough a time as that movie had getting made and coming out in the first place. I feel like that would have made it even tougher. So they needed them have a happy goal. It's like, oh no, he's on a quest. He wants to get back to the past. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool pick.
One of these days, I'm gonna have to see that movie.
It's good.
It's funny. It's really funny and depressing at the same time.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mike Judge, he's a good writer. Like, it's funny to see all these great comedy directors. And, you know, and everybody. I was just listening to a podcast with Rob Schneider, and he's like, "Oh yeah, you know, working with Mike Judge on SNL as a writer, blah blah." And I'm like, "Wow, every comedy director, it came out of SNL." I feel like so, Jenny. Give us your number four.
All right. So my number four, I'm already ready to explain it because I'm already ready for you guys.
You rocked my world with Red Dawn, so I can't wait to see what you got.
To completely not agree with me on this one. But my number four is 1998's Pleasantville.
Okay.
And my reasoning is...
It was on Wikipedia.
Was it? Is there a list on? Yeah. Was there a list on Wikipedia?
I did see. I did cheat and look at a list of dystopian movies, and I was surprised to see it on there. But
we're just saying you don't have to justify it because it was on the Wikipedia list, so it's
good.
True.
Damn it! I should have seen that list. It would have been a much easier task.
Yeah, right.
But
you came
Wikipedia.
Up with it on your own. That's the point, and it's admirable.
You're
that you actually thought to put it on there.
You don't need to group think like we did and go look on Wikipedia.
I just I just studied 5 minutes before the task. That's all.
That'll teach you not to be lazy.
I know, right?
So you have a computing device in your hand. You could have been looking it up during
this
whole podcast.
I googled okay, list of dystopian.
But no,
movies,
I totally get. I totally get why you would put it on the list.
Yeah. All right. Good. So I don't have to explain it. Boom.
Boom.
Moving on.
You can drop your mic if you want.
Yeah.
Now, this is written and directed by Gary Ross, right?
Yep.
That's correct.
I like
Mr. Dystopia himself.
Yeah.
If we leave out Secretariat.
Yeah.
Which how that fits into this dystopian trilogy, I'm not sure.
Well, it has Tobey Maguire in it.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Seabiscuit.
Seabiscuit, not Secretariat, pardon me.
I like this movie, and so how are you prepared to justify this movie?
Because it's a world that looks like a utopia from the outside, but really everyone's completely miserable and unhappy, and you can actually tell when they're finally happy in this world because they become colorful.
Yeah. So the
and then they become ostracized.
Yeah.
And then
everyone
else goes, oh, thought crime.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
What I got from this movie is that all this world needed was more orgasms.
Exactly.
I think every world needs more orgasms. Yeah. That's just the lesson.
And that's a message that we need to get out more.
That should be the tagline.
But they got to be careful because they start fires. Orgasms start fires in this movie.
Well, that's only if everyone's not having orgasms regularly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, it means everyone should have more orgasms so we can prevent fires.
Yeah.
There you go.
There was just a fire this weekend.
That was an
orgasm.
Someone
had an orgasm for the first time.
Is there like an orgasm service that has controlled orgasms to keep from having a...
That's another movie.
Sometimes you have to start a counter-orgasm to come the other direction.
Because you don't want the orgasm to leap over the orgasm trench that you built to contain it.
I feel like we're writing a porn right now.
No,
I feel like this metaphor is getting a little
strange. One thing you want to avoid is an orgasm storm, because you can't stop that.
Okay. What's with all these multiple orgasm jokes?
We're gonna work. We're gonna work firepower back into it, and it's gonna come full circle.
I feel like if we just got together, we'd make the smartest porn ever.
The Citizen Kane of porn. Wait,
it would never get
that's
made.
That's a thing already.
They shelve it because they're like, it's too smart. People are not gonna get it.
People
can masturbate.
They're not gonna know what to do.
mess with. I was too busy thinking. Yeah. Made me think. Lost my focus.
So that was your number four?
Yep.
Very cool. We should really work on this movie, guys. My number four is from 2000, and it is... I feel like Gary Ross... No, not Gary Ross. Let's just... It's Battle Royale. Done.
That's my number one.
Really?
Our first repeat. Finally. Yeah. Finally our first repeat. Wow. Okay.
So when did you see this movie?
I was in college.
It was on my list, but I'm going to move it now so I can talk about something else. There,
That's a better idea, tricky. But I don't have very many good stuff, so I'm just going to go with it.
All right. So I'll read you the synopsis on IMDb. In the future, the Japanese government captures a class of ninth grade students and forces them to kill each other under the Revolutionary Battle Royale Act.
They made a movie out of that.
Yeah.
Because I was there when that happened. That was crazy.
Yeah.
God. Yeah. Those days.
That was weird.
Those North Koreans. Seeing it on TV, you know?
Yeah.
Showing it.
But I feel like...
Picking your favorite kid.
Yeah. Yeah. So sorry when Lee Chang went down. Yeah. Anyway.
As much as I wanted to love... was it the Gary Ross movies?
The Hunger Games?
Hunger Games. As much as
Why
I...
Why did you...
You wanted to love it?
I wanted to, because I'm like, I wish... But
did you not watch the trailer?
I know. I was like, well, it's kind of like Battle Royale. I hope it's cool. And then I forgot it was PG-13.
Again, did you not watch the trailer?
I know. The thing is, Gary Ross was the wild card there, because Gary Ross had like an amazing record. You know what I mean? Like every single movie that he's done has been amazing.
It's very eclectic.
Well, great. Yes.
As well, which I
don't
which
know if I would call Seabiscuit amazing.
What? I fucking cried during Seabiscuit, dude.
Well, that's embarrassing that you just said that
the
out loud.
The horse made me cry, man.
That's you realize really... this is going on the internet.
Yeah,
forever,
people are
going
to listen to you say that.
That's right. Cried forever.
Yeah. But I was excited because of Gary Ross. And it was no Battle Royale.
No,
well,
it's not.
It wasn't allowed.
It wasn't even the Hunger Games, the book. The Hunger was way more entertaining than this movie.
Way more gory and way more.
The Hunger Games, I had trouble, like, because the movie's coming out. I was like, all right. Well, everyone's talking about this book, so I got to read it. I finished that book in like a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I was like, I couldn't put it down. The movie, I'm like, this movie won't fucking end, and they cut good stuff out.
Yeah,
Battle Royale. But if you want to see a good,
mad about it.
If you want to see something, if you weren't satisfied with the Hunger Games, watch Battle Royale. It's what.
God,
it's
if you haven't seen it yet, then just go. That has nothing to do with Hunger Games.
I need to.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen it. And,
oh, it's fantastic.
I found Hunger Games immensely disappointing. So.
Okay. Oh yeah, you won't be disappointed.
Watch Battle Royale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At all.
Unless you don't like reading subtitles, then you're screwed.
No.
But yeah, that's
probably a dubbed version somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
God.
That's something worse than dubbed version. Unless you're really drunk and it's a really dumb movie, like if you watch Transformers with like French subtitles. I mean, French, dubbed in French.
That classes it up.
It makes it like a really high budget foreign film.
I can't go with you down that
It's like
train.
A Lost Truffaut movie now.
Yeah. He's like, interesting what he's doing with these robots.
No.
Yeah. And their accent is, so it's my number four and Jenny's number one.
I'm going to change it to my number two.
Okay. All right.
I'm more surprised.
Oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Twist. Shyamalan.
Adam, what is your number four?
My number four... is from 1992, and it is Fortress.
Ooh, with
Christopher Lambert,
nice,
and Kurtwood Smith.
Nice.
Ooh. Smith.
What is it about movies?
Clarence Thomas, huh?
Yes, Clarence Thomas.
Boddicker, you son of a
There's something about. I feel like I could have made this list with nothing but movies about prison in the future, where it's like just the totalitarian
no escape.
I hope no one else had that on their list. That was a close one, though. Sure. That was an honorable mention. I really like No Escape.
And the one that just came out, too. The
Lockdown?
Yeah.
Or Lockout. Lockout.
The
Escape from Earth?
Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce.
Oh, God, that one.
I don't know. There's just something about, like, oh, hey, it's the future. We're just going to take over and make you go to this crazy prison for having a baby. That's the plot. That's how the movie opens. Christopher Lambert and his wife are trying to escape. They're trying to like cross the border because they're having a baby illegally, and they both get detained and sent to this fortress prison where Kurtwood Smith falls in love with Christopher Lambert's wife and is like watching her, and it's just weird and crazy and fun.
I feel like the cat's like trying to break in.
I hope that's
maybe it's Kurtwood Smith.
Yeah,
he's like, it's Boniger.
It's Boniger.
Clarence Thomas.
I haven't seen Fortress.
You've never seen Fortress?
No, I've seen
so
the preview.
You probably haven't seen Fortress.
I've seen the cover. Whoa, no.
I like both Fortress movies.
Really?
Really?
Was there a sequel?
There is, yeah. Wow, Fortress 2. Okay.
Like Sniper 1 and 2?
No, like better.
No. All right.
Better than Sniper.
Very cool. I got to check. That's on my list now.
It's fun.
Watch.
It's fun and crazy. Crazy 90s Christopher Lambert.
Early 90s,
sci-fi.
Right?
92.
But just weird, bizarre, like totalitarian state when like they're always watching you. And like the computer from the prison can like go outside of the prison and take over electronic devices outside of the prison. It's crazy.
It's like the Ghost in the Machine, dude.
Kinda.
Very cool. That was your number four?
That was my number four.
All right, Trey, what is your number three?
Well, let's see again. I'm just
your unofficial three.
It's a loose five.
That's five. The name of our porn.
It might be as much as seven. I don't know. I'm gonna go with Strange Days next.
Ooh. Oh. Yeah,
Which is interesting. Interesting because it's a dystopia. Although if you watch that movie, it's us. I mean, it's Los Angeles. It's like it's kind of amazing how old that movie is to realize it's like made in like 97.
It's 97, and it takes place in 99.
It's all about the year 2000, the future year of 2000. But you know, it doesn't have like flying cars or anything like that. It just has
everybody wears leather pants.
Exactly, but we all did at the time. So there you go. But it's the only future thing about it is, of course, the brain scan technology that the plot hangs on. Otherwise, it really is just kind of a bad day in Los Angeles. Otherwise, it just never ends. It's just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, really the only future thing about it other than the brain thing is that the trash cans are on fire.
Trash cans are constantly on fire.
But that's not really a futuristic thing at
all. And that's, you know, right now that's just Halloween on Hollywood Boulevard. Yeah. Strange Days, it's 24/7. But Strange Days is just, you know, it really doesn't address the dystopia. That's not what the movie's about. It just takes place in that, you know, kind of, it's the world we live in, but we call it dystopia. But I just think it's a great movie. And it's about, you know, it's just a dark, 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 gritty, you know, thriller that I think is just amazingly well made. And, you know, it's hey, who made that movie, by the way? Why, it's Oscar winner Kathryn Bigelow made that movie. So, you know, Ralph Fiennes is in it. It's a fantastic cast, Angela Bassett. And William Fichtner again. And written by a little man named James Cameron. So it's you know, if you like your Cameron, then you know, and you haven't checked out Strange Days, then by gosh, you know,
and just
get
that,
on it.
I mean, that cast just goes on forever. Michael Wincott, D'Onofrio,
amazing.
Juliette Lewis.
Juliette Lewis.
Oh wow.
Tom Sizemore. Yeah, Tom Sizemore
with a really weird long axle.
Sizemore with the thing. I have to say, it's a feature of Cameron and also.
Kathryn Bigelow,
and they weren't married at that time. I think they were already divorced when they made Strange Days. But it was around the time they were married. Maybe they were, but both Angela Bassett is an amazing female character. You know, the kind of female character, you know, that you don't see except in Cameron movies.
Yeah,
you know, strong but still female. Not like you know, it's a male character. We gave it a female name and cast a woman. You know, it's definitely a female character, but she's, you know, a complete badass and amazingly well acted. And Juliette Lewis, although she's not a good character, it's one of the most amazing performances that I've seen in a movie in quite some time. Juliette Lewis is just fearless in what she does in that movie. She's nude practically most of the time. She's wearing, like, you know, these costumes that don't even exist. And just the character she plays is amazing. So it's, I just...
Sounds like a utopia to me.
Exactly. See, one person's dystopia is another person's utopia. It's just an amazingly dark, dark, hard-hearted thriller that in the end is, you know, is, you know, all about redemption and love and all kinds of crazy stuff that they pull out at the end. You go, wow, I had no idea they were going to pull that out of the hat like they did, but they did.
I'm glad like she's getting success because more people that hadn't seen her earlier films are getting
the chance. I hope people
are
going back to check out Strange Days because I think Strange Days is a great film.
I like all her films. Like Near Dark.
Near Dark was, you know, put her on the map.
Yeah.
I just recently...
Near Dark was her asylum film, basically.
Yeah. I still haven't seen K-19.
I was just going to say, I only recently, and I love submarine movies, and I only just recently caught K-19.
I'm sorry, but
I forgot about that
movie. The movie doesn't make sense. Liam Neeson could not be on a submarine. Doesn't work for me. Yeah. Too tall.
Blue Steel is probably her weakest movie. It's beautiful looking, really? But it's a crazy movie. It's insane. The plot makes no sense at all, but it's a beautiful
looking. Less sense than Liam Neeson on a submarine?
Yeah, I'm on par. on par. Wow. But it's got some great stuff in it, but it's not my favorite. Blue Steel is like my least favorite of her movies, but it's still great looking and very stylish, and she's obviously, she's a great, she wasn't a bad director when she made that movie.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Something about Jeremy Lee Curtis is a beat cop.
Sold. I think the things that are wrong with that movie aren't Kathryn Bigelow's fault, I don't think. But that's to me that's her my least favorite of her movies, but yeah, she's from right out of the gate, Near Dark. Wait, a woman made a horror movie about vampires, and it's kind of cool.
And it's, like, it's kind of a Western.
Yeah. And half the cast of Aliens is in it. I got to check that out.
Yeah. Very cool. That is your number three, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Strange Days.
Brian. My number three is Demolition Man.
Ooh.
Big fan
good
of Demolition
one,
Man.
Dude. Yeah. I didn't picture you. I feel like we're bonding now.
All right.
Yeah. I feel like we've connected.
Moment. Yeah, I'm sharing a moment.
Well, again, I mean, again, you...
Hot dogs.
You have to take it as a satire, and I think it's a great satire. Yeah. And it's great in a satire in an entirely different way than a movie like Idiocracy, which is very apparent and upfront from frame one. Idiocracy is absolutely a satire and is making fun of this. Demolition Man is a lot subtler in that regard. Like, I mean, maybe if I had...
But Sylvester Stallone still doesn't know that it's a satire.
Yeah.
He's like, it was an action movie.
Yeah, I was doing the thing. maybe if
the
I
battle
had,
of the Sylvester Stallone impersonation.
Maybe if I had been an adult when I had seen it, but I watched it, when it first came out as a kid, and it took me half a dozen viewings before over the course of me growing up. Before
it's
I
like
went,
me with the original Batman TV show, and I grew up, I was like, they were messing with us.
You were just kidding around the whole time.
They weren't being serious.
But yeah, I mean, just the production design itself is great. In terms of this is a believable in a very specific way. In terms of it's kind of the out there and like it's too glossy to be true, too good to be true, glossy kind of future. But it has that extra layer of texture there to it, And it also hits more home for me now, having called Los Angeles my home for several years and not having...
You mean San Angeles.
San Angeles, yeah.
Yeah.
But the whole idea of...
Eating
just,
a Taco Bell.
Well, I was going to say more like... And, it's not the reality that we live in, but the people in 90s, like you lived here in the 90s, right? Yeah. 90s Angelenos lived in the reality of oh my God, the city is days away from completely breaking down societally. Yeah. But
same sensibility as Escape from New York when
exactly.
was a shithole that
just in that
normal
80s
human
and
90s, being
would
want to live in.
Where like this is everybody is running amok and it's going to be days before all society breaks down altogether. But just great science fiction and great comedy at the same time, are my two favorite things in the world. So
it is surprisingly funny when it decides to be funny. You're like, wait, was that a joke? They just make a joke.
Yeah,
they made a joke.
And they made a bunch of jokes.
Yeah.
This should have been on my list. I thought I had it on something else, but I didn't. I just
rechecked.
Really? It should have been on my list because I do love it. And it is. I was thinking about it all day. Like, it's just that weird, too good to be true, or I don't want to be there. Like, I would be like Dennis Leary. He's like, I have to live in the sewer.
Rather live in the sewer.
Oh, because I could. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I would just want to say
Dennis,
fuck all the time.
Dennis Leary's monologue in that. I'm not even going to try to do it, but it's amazing.
It's so good.
It's like
a perfect cast.
But, so do you remember, like, the big release blowouts that they were doing when this movie came out, like, on MTV? Where they took over MTV. They blew up a building for this movie.
Yeah.
Like, not... For like filming,
not
the movie,
in the movie,
but
for the
after
the
movie,
the
like
movie.
To advertise the movie, they blew
I
up
don't
a building.
Remember that. Yeah, no,
and they had like Stallone and Sandra Bullock there, and I want to say Sting played a song.
Yeah.
At the demolition of this movie,
he did.
I hope so.
At the demolition of this building for the movie,
he's I love tantra, and here let me play your song. And we'll roll down this building.
He brought out a lute. he was playing his lute
played it on a
loop while the building was exploding.
For some reason,
him.
my Sting sounds a lot like Eddie Vedder. Sorry.
Yeah, it was.
Well, as long as he doesn't sound like what's his name? Ted Levine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. He's a long time, bro.
Now sing Don't Stand So Close to Me, but as Ted Levine.
Demolition Man is so awesome. And just everything, like, everything that's history and, like, I think in the movie, at one point, Schwarzenegger is referred to as
the
president.
Libraries.
Yeah,
he's a president.
So, well, because in both of their movies in that time frame, they had the back and forth, and so that was the reference to Schwarzenegger being president is a pretty great one.
Which is funny because it's about L.A. and he eventually...
Have we talked about...
Wasn't that long before he even became...
Very long before. He didn't become governor until 2001.
But he was involved with the government because he was already doing the president's fitness stuff.
Right.
I remember I was always pissed at him about. Like, I loved his movies. I'm like, dude... I can't touch my toes. Yeah. Stop making me do this goddamn test where I have to try to touch my toes.
Yeah.
Well, it was one of those things where everybody knew about his political ambitions for a long time. So I'm sure that's where that joke came from.
And his even before ass grabbing ambitions.
Yeah.
Have we talked about Lori Petty in this movie?
Lori Petty's in this movie?
No. She was cast as Sandra Bullock part.
Yeah.
And then she got fired. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
They had no chemistry. So
how far into production?
I don't know how long. Not very long.
Yeah.
And wasn't that... Wasn't that before Speed? Didn't that come out before Speed?
Yeah.
So she was in that, but it was Speed that really...
That broke her,
out. Yeah. But then you go,
wasn't?
Yeah.
I want to say Speed was first.
I think Speed was first.
Really?
I think
Speed
she
is 95 or 94.
Well, while you check that, I just recently watched this.
I knew
Speed is 94. What year is Demolition Man?
93.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. Yeah. All right. There you go.
So, yeah, she was like the young girl, like, oh, she's good. Get her in there, you know, but then... Speed, yeah. Like, which is weird because she's great in both movies, of course. But
in the scene with Dennis Leary and when he's doing the speech, standing next to him to his right is a very young Jack Black that has no lines.
Really?
And he's just like reacting. Like, yeah. And he's really skinny at the time. And it's really funny. Yeah,
that's great.
But everybody's good in this movie. Simon Phoenix.
Yeah. Rob Schneider.
Rob Schneider's even good.
Rob Schneider. One of Rob Schneider's few good roles.
In a way that he's not in the original Dread. But it's really
Benjamin
sad.
Bratt is really funny.
Yeah. Benjamin Bratt's in it. That's right. Yeah.
Dread was after this, right? I think.
Judge Dread, yeah.
I think so, yeah.
It's Dread was 96 or 97. Yeah.
There's actually a lot of good stuff in the original Dread, but Rob Schneider really takes a lot of the magic out of it.
Yeah. Well, good pick. I didn't Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah,
thanks. Damn you. Very cool. Jenny?
Well played.
All right. So my number three. What was it again? Oh, yeah. 82's Blade Runner.
I knew somebody would put Blade Runner.
I was wondering when that would show up.
I figured I'll be the one to do it.
See, I didn't put Blade Runner on my list just because I don't want to have to talk about it because I have no idea how to talk about Blade Runner as smart as the rest of the world talks about Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I think I missed the boat on Blade Runner.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Blade Runner.
It's cool looking. And I like the stuff with Roy Batty.
I love everything.
It's gorgeous. It's absolutely
yeah,
gorgeous.
Like, I love the look at it, but I don't know.
I
was never on board. Like, I've never been like, oh my God, Blade Runner.
Okay, this is a weird thing, but I love Blade Runner in the same way I like Demolition Man, because it's about a future LA. You know? Like, I just like... That
is about a future LA.
Yeah, like a dystopian.
So you really like Escape from LA? Because it's about LA.
I don't hate it.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right. Well, you just kind of shot your whole argument in the foot there.
Yeah. But yeah, I love Blade Runner. I don't know why you are not on board with this thing.
I don't know. It's not my favorite.
You didn't drink the Kool-Aid, huh?
I didn't drink the Kool-Aid. Like, it looks really cool, but I'm not like I really want to watch Blade Runner. Like, I've seen it on TV, I've seen it on the big screen. I'm like, it looks really cool, but I'm never like, let's watch Blade Runner again.
Yeah.
I'd rather watch Alien.
So, out of the whole group here, is he a replicant or is he not?
He's a replicant.
Yeah.
He's absolutely a replicant.
I think so too. Trey?
Wait, are you talking about me?
Yes.
You. Yes, you.
Yes, we're talking about
you. Are you a replicant?
Why wouldn't I help the tortoise?
That's right. Because you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I go with he's not, and I believe the official line is that he's not.
But, really?
Well, isn't the story that Harrison Ford and Ridley Scott have different answers?
Like, yeah.
Harrison Ford thinks that he is, and Ridley Scott thinks
something
that he isn't.
Like that,
something
right?
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it's funny, I went to see a screening. I went to see, it wasn't a screening, it was a Q&A with the writer of... the Shia LaBeouf movie where like all the cameras are chasing him. The
technology,
Eagle Eye, yes. And that screenwriter was working on a sequel to Blade Runner. And I'm like, no, no, why? Yeah. I'm like, if I kill him now, I could prevent this. It's like I've been sent
like a whole Terminator.
I've been
thing.
Sent to the
or you just go back in time and kill him before he even makes Eagle Eye.
Yeah,
that's true. There you go.
But yeah, very cool. When did you see this?
Just a couple years ago. Right when we started the podcast, actually.
For the first time you saw it?
Yeah.
You were like, oh, we're going to have a podcast about movies.
I need to start watching Blade Runner.
I have to see Citizen Kane. I have to see Blade Runner. Yeah. I have to see 2001.
Yeah. I still have a whole list of movies I still need to see. Very I'm behind. Cool.
But good pick. I'm glad I wasn't on my list. That was an honorable mention.
I'm having a weird epiphany where I feel like I'm really... You know what it comes down to? Is that I'm really not a huge Ridley Scott fan. Like, I just love Alien.
What?
I love Alien, and I like some of his other movies.
He's hit and miss for me. I mean,
but I'm not like, oh my God, I have to see this movie because Ridley Scott made it.
Yeah, Alien is Alien. For a while there, it was like he could do no wrong. But then, you know, but now it's like, well, you know, there was, you know, the movie about France with Russell Crowe. Actually, even before Alien.
Oh, that was.
If you've never seen The Duelist, which was his first feature,
right? I like the.
It's amazing.
I like The Duelist.
Yeah. Duelist,
but Alien is like Alien was on our on our first episodes, like one of my top five.
You've
got to
recognize Alien, even if you don't like Alien. You've got to recognize what Alien is and how it, you know, where.
But
it
fits. Just going through his credits, I'm like, I think it's just that I'm not.
But then it's gonna hit and miss ever since then. You know, sometimes great stuff, and sometimes like not so great.
I always have fun with the Scott brothers. They always make fun.
See, I think I prefer Tony.
Really?
Yeah.
You're a fan of...
I like crazy colors and fast moving. cameras.
I have to say that until I think probably... Although I did like his last movie. I think Crimson Tide was probably the first Tony Scott movie that I liked at all. And I really liked Unstoppable, his last movie. I think it's really good. But I was never a Tony Scott fan. Never,
really?
Ever.
I think if I went through a list and I checked off each of their movies that I liked, I feel like I would have more checks for Tony than Ridley. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to confess something. I think Brian knows this already. Hmm. I'm a huge NASCAR fan, so I love Days of Thunder.
See, for me, Top Gun, not a big fan. Days of Thunder, not a big fan. You know, Last Boy Scout was like, wow, that was a terrible movie.
I love Last Boy Scout. We just talked about it last week.
You haven't seen True Romance?
Oh, wow.
That's
after he did those first couple of movies that I didn't care about, I was like, a Tony Scott movie, a pass, you know. So, you know, I just happened to see, you know, Crimson Tide, which I was like, all right, that's a good movie, and I heard good things about Unstoppable, so I watched that and I liked
it. Crimson Tide
with Denzel.
It's a submarine movie,
but
and they're both short enough.
It's Tony Scott, I think.
That's what he
said.
That's
what
It's the first Tony Scott movie. I was like, oh, that was good. I like that one.
I just rewatched Crimson Tide the other week for the first time since it came out, and
with baby Viggo Mortensen.
It's a little too Tony Scott. Like if you just dialed down the Tony Scott a little bit, it would be one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah,
but it's just a little too red, green, purple, blue, glowy on their faces with the Hans Zimmer music bounding. It's like, if you just dial that down a little bit, it would be one of my favorite movies of all time. But
yeah, I can officially say now, after looking through both of their credits on IMDb, I prefer Tony Scott.
We have confirmation.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
I really dig the Eagle has Spy Games. I really dig it.
I like Spy Game. I like The Hunger. I like Top Gun. I'm probably the one person in America who, besides Eddie Murphy, likes Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Forgot he even did that.
Days of Thunder. I like The Last Boy Scout. Yeah. I love True Romance. Yeah, I am having a harder time picking a movie I don't like. I even like the BMW Beat the Devil series that he did. So.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I like all the BMW films. There's some great directors on those.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen that?
I think I saw one or two.
I remember when they came out and there was...
That was with Clive Owen and James Brown.
I saw one.
Joe Carnahan did one. Wayne Carr White.
And didn't John Woo do one?
John Woo did one, yeah. There's a lot of cool...
Doves.
Yeah, a lot of doves.
Yeah,
there was a lot of doves.
Trunk full of doves. Yeah. That was a big one.
What were we talking about again?
Just Blade Runner. Blade Runner.
Blade Runner.
Sorry about that. So Blade Runner, good pick. That's your number three?
Mm-hmm.
My number three is from 1987. I might have mentioned this before, but who cares?
Going for the classics.
I love this movie.
Oh, you bastard. Don't do it.
87. Let's see. Let me think. 87?
RoboCop.
OCP. RoboCop?
Yeah.
Okay. RoboCop.
Okay.
And that's fine.
Dystopic and crime ridden Detroit, which is now.
really.
Well, I mean, I think it was then too.
Yeah. Always.
I mean, so it's now in the sense that Detroit is actually bankrupt now. So OCP could buy.
Yeah.
The fictional OCP could buy Detroit.
We could buy Detroit.
And we just pulled all our change out of our pockets.
How much you got on you?
Right. I mean, if you haven't seen Detropia, which is also on Instant right now. apparently, instead of OCP buying Detroit, hipsters are buying Detroit.
Ooh. Yeah.
So there's that.
Interesting. Yeah. There's a dystopia.
It's going to be like a quilted Ed 209. Like a macrame Ed 209.
Hipster town. Oh, my God.
Ed 209 with a flannel.
A lot of plaid.
And a really, really tight jean. Yes.
And a little hat. A little hat. On the side.
And a mustache. Mustache.
And a manual typewriter.
And it is... dystopic. Crime-ridden Detroit. A terminally wounded cop returns to the force as a powerful cyborg with submerged memories haunting him.
Okay, so I'm really glad that you picked this movie.
There you go.
Because I wasn't going to pick it because I had it on something else. But this is, reminds me of what you were talking about, Demolition Man, Brian, like realizing things later on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very satirical movie then.
As a kid, I was like, this is the best action movie I've ever seen. Awesome action. Yeah. The guy gets melted with acid in his face.
But then when you're like listening to the dialogue in the background where it's like, oh, yeah, no, we're strategically we're repositioning key candidates in places where we know they're going to die. It's like, what the fuck?
That is
messed up.
Yeah. And also like the whole like the news updates that they keep doing
throughout
the whole movie are like great.
So as much as I love like the news updates in this one, but the commercials in RoboCop 2, like the sunblock 9000 or whatever. Yeah. It's like they had to up the ante because it wasn't Verhoeven the second time. We got to make up for not having
Verhoeven Kirshner the second time.
We got to make crazier commercials.
Yeah. It was the second movie was trying too hard on that level, on that stuff. It was you know, it was a little too overtly silly sometimes.
Yeah.
The first movie was like walk that fine line of really good satire of like that could really be a thing. That could really be a product that they would sell. You know,
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Nuclear war game and all that kind of stuff. You know.
Oh, Bixby Snyder.
Yeah. And part three was just samurais.
Let's not talk about
samurais and flying robots.
I won't talk about it. I didn't even know there was a part three.
There was no part three to RoboCop. And there was no Highlander sequel.
And there was no RoboCop TV series.
No, at all.
Wow. These things never happened.
But the cartoon happened. That was
cool. Oh, yeah. And the Rambo cartoon. Remember that, too?
I don't remember the Rambo cartoon.
Did he have, like, a panda bear sidekick or something in the cartoon?
No. But every time he'd get ready for business, he'd tie on the red bandana. And then the song would start. And you know he was ready to kick ass. But RoboCop, it's a good action movie, but on top of the fact that it's more than meets the eye, like the Transformers.
But good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, hold on. So that also reminds me. Did anybody else see that Michael Bay apologized for Armageddon?
He did.
Yeah.
Why? I'm like, of all the movies apologize for.
He gave the same spiel as I just did for Moby Dick. He was like, yeah, we ran out of time. They took the movie away from me in the editing room and all that kind of stuff. I was like, I hear you, dude. I feel you.
Yeah. What's funny because.
My thing was like, Armageddon. Seriously? Pretty good.
Not Pearl Harbor?
Yeah.
Or any of the Transformers, or basically everything you did after Armageddon?
Bad Boys 2 is where the apology is owed, dude. Come on.
I feel like a lot of Twitter tweets were like, I feel like this is the only time where I've had to defend a movie from a director.
Its own director. You're wrong, Michael Bay. Armageddon's your best work.
Yeah. Well, The Rock and Armageddon go hand in hand. Criterion Collection.
Yeah.
The Rock is a great movie. Yeah. Armageddon is not.
Well, compared to Deep Impact.
There was an actual sentence in English that just came out of your face. That's amazing.
Yeah. The Rock is a
The
good
Rock
movie.
Is an awesome movie. That was the phrase that came out.
Yeah.
The Rock is a good movie.
No, that's never been spoken in English before. That said,
The Rock is a perfectly fine movie. And Deep Impact is way better than Armageddon.
I'm not with that.
That's fine, but you just moved the goalpost pretty heavily just there. The Rock is better than Armageddon.
Yes.
That's a fascinating theory, Doctor, and I'd love to talk to you more about it. What?
I have a newsletter.
I would like to subscribe to your literature.
So my number three is RoboCop. Adam, what is your number three?
Okay, so I'm having trouble with my top three because they all got... Like, I don't normally do this, but I'm just kind of realizing as I'm looking at this top three that they all three have the exact same rating on IMDb. So as far as IMDb is concerned, they are equally rated movies.
Ooh.
So just randomly at this point, I guess, I'm going to go with 1998's Six String Samurai.
Ooh.
Ooh,
and the Red Elvises.
I didn't see this coming, dude.
You went indie on us there.
I love Six String Samurai. It's so silly. This was one of those USA movies.
Give the synopsis to this.
Okay, so in a post-apocalyptic world, of 1960s Nevada, a rock and roll samurai takes a young... Wait, see, this is a shitty one. Okay, so basically... Yeah, I don't like that synopsis. Yeah. So, like, World War III happens. The Russians launch their nukes, and it destroys most of the world. And somehow Elvis becomes king of America in Las Vegas. But then he dies, and so they're looking for a new heir to the throne.
Wow.
And so all of these guitar players are, like, making their sort of trek to Vegas to claim the throne. A pilgrimage, a hajj, if you will,
yeah.
To claim the throne and like rule the world. And this character, who doesn't really, oh, he's Buddy, and he's very Buddy Holly looking. He's got like a Gretsch kind of guitar and glasses, and he's making his way there. And along the way, he picks up this orphan boy, and he's being pursued by what's the character's name called? I don't remember, but he looks like Slash, basically.
Nice.
So it's like Rockabilly. Nice. Being stalked across the desert wasteland of America by Slash and his cronies, who are killing all of the guitar, like all of the folkier and rockabilly guitar players. And it's got a soundtrack by the Red Elvises, who are a Russian rockabilly band. And awesome. It's great.
Yeah. I've always heard of it, and I always like, I really need to check that out at some point.
I own this movie.
On VHS?
On DVD.
Ooh,
it's on Laserdisc. DVD.
Oh, I wish. That'd be awesome. Laserdisc. I watch it all the time on USA. And like any, because it's just so weird, and all with like they've got weird sand people who are like going around kidnapping people.
Do they ride in single file to hide their numbers?
You know, I don't really remember that they ride in single file, but they do have like an underground lair, and they kidnap people to like dismember later on. So there are similarities there, but then there's also like the cannibal Ozzie and Harriet characters.
Okay.
And it's just weird and fun and very very low budget, and I love it.
Very cool. What year is it from again?
98 or 97.
Been hearing about it forever. 98. I just haven't ever checked it out.
It feels like it was earlier for some reason.
Yeah, it feels like an early 90s movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was 98.
Oh, interesting. I've seen it, but not in years, so I don't remember a lot of this stuff.
Well, it's crazy, because it'll go from like playing the guitar, like playing a rockabilly riff, and then it'll take the sword out of the back of it and just fuck people up.
It's amazing. Something's in the end.
Like you do.
All right.
Nice. Where that are we sounds at? Something I'd like.
Yeah.
Number two, Trey?
Down to two. Okay, well, now I have to pick, like, let's see, of my several remaining, I'm going to have to pick, like, you know, so I don't seem like a real terrible person when I say number one. Even though these aren't supposed to be in any particular order, I'm going to go. Well, just to hedge my bets. I'm shocked, although maybe it'll show up in twos and ones. I don't know. But, Children of Men hasn't been mentioned yet.
Yeah, it's on my list. It's on my
list.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah.
It's my number one.
Fair. See, the problem enough. Is, okay. Oh, it is, okay.
Yeah. It's my number one.
Because we've talked about this movie so many times.
Yeah.
Okay.
I knew someone
I'll tell
would
you what
have
then.
It.
I'll tell you what, since I have so other ones, I will let that wait, and you guys can have at it in your number one slot. I'll throw in somebody else. Oh, no. I'm going to switch it up on you. I'm going to throw in Dark City. Boom!
Nice.
Oh! Switched it up on you. Dark City, I think, is just a crazy entertaining movie about definitely a weird, certainly a dystopia of the weirdest kind. You know, do we have to synopsize what Dark City is about? It's about this city where the sun never comes up and it's always nighttime. And it turns out that it's this bizarre alien experiment that's being run by these weird outsiders who want to know what humans are all about and keep messing with their every day. Wake up and
reality.
You're somebody else, and reality's been totally changed. But it's always this one city where it's always nighttime. And so it's a real mind screw of a movie, especially the way it starts, because, you know, when we covered it on our podcast rather famously in that particular episode of our podcast, someone on our podcast hated it because he just didn't know what the hell was happening. You know, he really hated the fact that the movie didn't say what was going on right from the
get-go.
Was
that the first time that seen the movie?
Well, he'd seen it, and that's why he hated it.
But he hadn't
really paid
like
that much attention.
30 or 45 minutes.
Yeah, and
basically,
given up on it.
Basically, he
didn't get it.
Yeah, basically, I'd seen exactly enough of it right before they give you an idea of
what
the big
was
picture.
Happening.
Yeah.
So he goes, I hate it. This movie's just being, you know, obtuse and you know, not telling me what's going on. It's like, it's called a setup. They're about to, you know, tell you what that was all about, and then it makes sense. So it's rather a notorious episode of the podcast we do because it was very combative arguments.
It was one of our more
famous
energetic
ones.
Podcasts.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Where it's like, no, you're an idiot. It's a good movie, but but I really enjoy Dark City just because I think it's really entertaining and just I like the weirdness of it and the fact that it is in this completely surreal invented world and I think it realizes that world really really beautifully, and it's Alex Proyas, right? You know, so wonderfully stylish, and I just happen to also I really dig it because we have a thing that we talk about in the other show, which comes from Goldman, Surprising But Inevitable. William Goldman talks about, you know, the perfect movie ending is an ending that's surprising and inevitable. Where as soon as it happens, you go, I didn't see that coming, but how did I not see that coming? Because that has to be the ending, where it makes perfect sense. And the ending of Dark City is one of the prime examples of that, where it's like, I didn't see it coming, and of course that's the ending. Yeah. How did I not see that coming? And, so the fact that it was able to, you know, that's a really an amazing feat, is where you can set something up so that people don't know how it's going to end. But as soon as it ends, you go, that makes perfect sense, and I don't see, you know. You gave me every clue I needed to understand that's what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And yet I still didn't see that coming. And Dark City is one of the best examples I can name in movie history that I could say it does that.
I'm really glad that you put that on your list. I love this movie.
Yeah.
What's the statute of limitations on stealing cable? Does anybody know? Because I may or may not have known someone who had a black box around the time of some pay-per-view, and I may or may not have watched this every other day, just over and over and over again on loop, because pay-per-view would just play this, like one channel would play the same movie all day.
Yeah.
So I watch this movie so much, and I never got sick of it. It's so much fun. It's like that awesome trifecta of sci-fi, film noir, horror.
Yeah.
I have that no
that neo-noir world that they set up is really, really cool.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matrix owes a lot to Dark City. Yeah. I think it really does.
Yeah. Have you seen this, Jenny?
I don't think I have.
You should check it. I think you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, it was one I hadn't seen until we did that episode. That was one of our earlier episodes, it's been a while now. But yeah,
it's fun. Rufus Sewell is great.
Rufus Sewell,
Kiefer Sutherland. Jennifer Connelly.
William
Hurt.
I really
the guy from Rocky Horror.
Yeah. This movie and
the guy who wrote Rocky Horror, Richard O'Brien.
This and The Crow. I was kind of obsessed with Alex Proyas. Like, I'm like, this guy's amazing. And then, like, came back. He kept digging, and he never came out. He never came out of that.
What's he done since? He's done something since.
Knowing. Nicolas Cage. Yeah, okay. He's done a bunch of, like, almost B-movies.
Yeah.
And, he never kind of recovered from that.
Dark City. I mean, The Crow is its own thing.
Oh, he did iRobot.
Which is hit and miss for me. There's a lot of good stuff in iRobot, but it's certainly stylish. You can see the style at work, but I think Dark City is his masterpiece, and so far, anyway.
I love The Crow, but I can say very easily it's not an amazing movie. It's just I was the exact right age for that movie when it came out.
Yeah, me
but
too.
Dark
me
City
too.
Yeah. is an amazing movie.
I think Dark City was like Roger Ebert was famously just thought, this is the movie. Didn't he do a commentary for it or something like that? Ebert was big fan of Dark City, and
David Escoyer, one of the co-writers on there. So Dark pretty City. Cool.
Definitely dystopian.
Yeah.
Definitely. Best dystopian as it gets.
Yeah, Brian, definitely. For my number two, I'm going to dip into the history books and come out with the original dystopian film, Metropolis.
Okay.
Very cool.
Which I think should be up there in the top one or two.
With the Tangerine Dream score or the original?
Talk about
a dystopia. There was a time in this world when every movie score was done by Tangerine Dream. That was a dark time.
Why I don't like Blade Runner.
Yeah, that was part of the dark days. Yeah,
I watched it a few years ago. They had rediscovered some footage. Mm-hmm. You know, it had been footage that had been missing, and they finally found it in an attic somewhere, and they re-released it. And that was the first time I remember watching it, like in film school. Like, okay, here's one of the landmark films. We got to sit down and watch it. And not really getting it at all, or, you know, just not clicking. And I went to see it in the theater when they had put the footage back in. And for whatever reason, it just floored me in a way that it completely missed before. And I don't know if it's like, if the missing footage makes the story make sense in a way that it just kind of doesn't fully make sense because they're legitimately missing scenes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't think it's entirely that, because a lot of it is just the sheer enormity of the production involved, combined with the fact that you're talking like it's 1920, whatever the actual year is.
27.
And it's like Titanic level production value. Oh, yeah. They built this entire, you know, underground catacombs thing, put hundreds of extras, men, women, and children, in this underground catacomb set, and then they flood the damn thing. And it's literally, it's today it would be, you know, green screen and composite and CG, but in 1927, it's actually hundreds of men, women, and children fleeing from waist-high water, just literally fleeing for their lives. And, you know, so that aspect alone, for just like sheer production audacity, is amazing to me, and why it's on my list. But beyond that, I mean, from kind of the intellectual standpoint, the fact that it's the originator of so many dystopian tropes, at least in film, in terms of, you know, the underground, you know, the Eloy and the Morlock kind of separation of classes, the coal miners underneath and the rich people living up top, living the utopian life. And just that kind of distinction that is really, really classic and vivid to us now.
Yeah. Noticing a theme in your list about the divide between utopias and dystopias.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think ultimately that's the point of dystopian movies, is to go, okay, here's the society that we could create, and here's maybe somebody's idea for a society. Here's how this could go wrong. And I think the ultimate point of telling a story like that is to get closer to actually being able to build some kind of utopian society. I freely admit that I am a utopianist, and I believe that it is possible in some way to build a utopia, and that if we don't kill ourselves before we do, we will eventually create it. But part of that is going, okay, well, what if we do this? And somebody thinks about doing that for a while, and they go, well, actually, if you do it this way, that'll happen. We just got to do that enough times. Eventually, we'll figure it out. But yeah, I mean, that's the point of the genre in the first place, or the idea in the first place, is to explore this, to know what not to do. Like, as I've said on our other show, Down in Front, or Friends in Your Head, or whatever you want to call it. Like,
something.
The point of storytelling in the first place is to tell you how to be a human being, or to give you some kind of lesson on how to behave as a human being. And that lesson can either be, here's what you should do, or here's what you should not do. Like, a story can take either form. And I think specifically the dystopian genre is about, here's what not to do as a society. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's, for me, that's the point of the genre in the first place.
If you want a dystopia, you know, what if that's your thing?
I really like the look of, that's, there's a movie right there.
Yeah.
How to Build a Dystopia.
How to Build a Dystopia.
I'm going to have a better dystopia. It was my number one when we did Future Films. Love it. I loved it when I first saw it on VHS, VHS, I want to say.
Yeah.
But I saw when they did the big re-release.
Yeah.
It was right in time for the TCM Film Festival, the first one, I think. And so I saw it at the Chinese Theater with I don't remember the name of the orchestra. It's a 3-man orchestra, but with live accompaniment.
Oh, wow.
And it was amazing.
Oh, wow.
It was
live orchestra.
It was so much fun to see it on the big screen, and to see the new footage, and to be in the Chinese Theater.
Yeah.
For that experience.
Right.
Yeah, it was awesome.
They used to do a lot of that at the Cine Family, but before, when it was the Silent Movie Theater, when there was the other owners, they used to do like Dracula with like a live.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was nice. Really great to see all those movies with like a live musical performance. So.
You mean Nosferatu?
Yes, sorry. Totally wrong movie, yeah. Sorry.
Stop totally playing! I can't hear what
he's saying. Did he say he likes wine?
Yeah. Unless it's the Spanish version and I don't speak Spanish, then I can
get weird when they did the Godfather with live organ accompaniment. It was like, shut up already!
They did Three Amigos with live accompaniment.
Yeah, so very cool. That's your number two.
Yep.
Jenny, what is your number two?
Battle Royale.
Oh, there you go. We skip your turn.
That's all right.
All right, my number two is from 1975. This is confusing because I thought it was.
There's some good dystopian movies in the 70s.
Death Race 2000.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah,
you keep creeping me out. Like I'm like, dude, I feel like you're about to step on my list. We just like we're the same years, just different movies.
Yeah,
you came very close to something that I think I might pull out.
The Roger Corman film.
Wait, so not the remake? Now, why not the remake?
Wait a minute.
well, several reasons.
I love this movie. It was one of Stallone's first movies.
Before the Italian Stallion?
Maybe shortly after the Italian Stallion.
David Carradine. It's just like, I think also I saw this movie as a kid, and I was a little bit too much obsessed with a little violence. And I didn't get it at the time. I mean,
you just wanted to see people get messed up.
I just wanted to see people get fucked up, dude. And,
well, there you go.
And goals. Yeah, and then, I love this movie. It's just so fun. As a kid, I had a lot of fun. But once you grow up, you're like, oh man, this is a fucked up fucking story, dude.
What's wrong with
you? Yeah. But then now watching it, like, I like the campy parts of it. I like, you know. It's Frankenstein. Come on. Yeah. How awesome is that? You never really see David Carradine. And I think at the time also, like, when I saw it, I had, you know, I wasn't even born when this movie came out. But once I saw it, like, I had already seen, like, Kung Fu with David Carradine and all that stuff. And so it was really cool to see, like, oh, this is a Kung Fu guy. Why is he wearing, like, this S&M gear? What's going on here?
Why does he look like Lord Humongous?
Yeah. But it's cool. Just all like the characters and stuff, and yeah, the remake did not do it justice. I was very upset with it. Damn you, Paul W.S. Anderson, for ruining a lot of movies.
How many times have we said that?
Every time. Yes.
I like Resident Evil.
I like Event Horizon a little bit.
I like
Horizon. I'll give you Event Horizon.
Yeah. So there you go. That's my number two, Adam.
My number two, also from 1975. I don't think I've had it on the list before. I feel like it's been mentioned before, but it wasn't on my list, so I'm not breaking the rules that I have set for myself at the beginning of the episode.
Wow. Where's this going?
It's A Boy and His Dog.
Oh, okay. Ooh. Oh, so that's why you were 75. That's why you went,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. If you guys are pulling out Death Race 2000 and Boy and His Dog, then I know. I had one that I was iffy on, but I'm going to rock your world.
Oh, yeah.
Alrighty. I'm looking forward to it. I know that we've at least mentioned this movie in passing.
But when you mentioned it before, I hadn't seen it, but now I've seen it. Streaming on Netflix. Yeah. I might still be,
So post-apocalyptic world where there, again, you've got the people above and the people below. Mm-hmm. Except, so in this one, the people below are the ones with their quote-unquote utopia, where they've created some crazy society where it's like Grover's Corners and they all wear white makeup and they have to inseminate people with people from the top of the top world because everyone below is sterile for some reason. And Jason Robards is like the leader of the community. Wait, so I haven't seen it.
No,
it's
Don Johnson. Yeah.
Don Johnson,
the boy.
Johnson, yeah, it's A Boy and His Dog. Don Johnson and his boy and his dog.
And his boy.
and because
of Don Johnson boy. Plays the voice of the dog.
Because of the nuclear fallout from like the war or whatever that wiped out most of the population, he has ESP and like he can communicate with his dog. And he has his dog go
God
find...
God bless the 70s.
Yeah. it's an acid trip of a movie. It's nuts.
His dog, like, so basically he helps the dog scavenge for food, and the dog helps him find women to have sex with. And then in the process
that
of this...
That part's true. That was the 70s.
They run into this girl who ends up tricking Don Johnson into coming into this underground community where they just want to milk him so they can inseminate everyone... So they can have, they can continue their generations, and it's crazy.
And where is this place?
the underground place. It's in the desert somewhere.
Oh. It's a movie.
You should ask.
Right? I knew that. Yeah.
Ask LQ Jones because he directed it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you don't know him, you would recognize him if you saw him. If you've seen any westerns. He's been in basically every Western that came out in the 60s, he was in.
I remember being so shocked, like, wait, LQ Jones, it's that guy from Western movies. Like,
yeah.
It's if you told me, like, Dub Taylor had directed it or something like that. Like, Walter Brennan made Boy and His Dog. What? What are you talking about?
Yeah, and it's great. And, like, the poster...
It's a nutty movie.
The poster was... It's a picture of... it's a picture of a mushroom cloud with a happy face in it. And that tells you all you really need to know about the movie. Like, that's the theme... Or the vibe of the movie that they're going for. And it's fun and weird and dark, and I love it.
All right.
So this is, I think, in the same episode that you listed this movie, I think you might have mentioned On the Beach.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah,
Which I would have used in this one, yeah. But I already used it.
I don't know if I'd go dystopian with that.
This is basically a question
to me. But.
Yeah, this is the question I had when I was putting together my list, and I consciously avoided putting anything that I felt could be a post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's weird.
Like, I almost didn't put...
Boy and His Dog does have a utopian society.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there can definitely be both, but, mm-hmm, you know... Mad Max.
I'm not sure I would count it. It's that whole weird where it's like,
all right, well, so a dystopia is the opposite of a utopia. So it's like, but how far, like, because anything shitty is not a utopia.
I guess I would qualify it like Dread is like, it's still a society that is functioning, but it's just not pleasant. You know, there's problems with it. There's mistakes being made. Or there's something about it that's not great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So, and that's basically the distinction I came to in my head. It's like, okay, this is not The Road or Mad Max. We can still do our
Armageddon or Apocalypse list.
Post-apocalyptic films.
That's a different genre.
All right. Very cool. I'm glad you put it on there. Excited.
I'm glad that I forgot that you had seen that.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And so let's do, if you can remember, a recap of your movies and your number one. If you can remember.
I get off the top of my head, can I remember? Probably not. I have to go to my list. Let's see. My number five was Dread. 4 was Serenity. 3 was Strange Days. 2 was whatever it was I just said a little while ago. Dark City.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump in real quick and I'm going to throw in, just because you talk about Boy and His Dog and Don Johnson, Melanie Griffith did a version of Boy and His Dog. Cherry 2000 fits this topic.
Oh, yes.
And it's actually a really fun movie. It's a really fun, cheap, crazy ass, let's go out in the desert and, you know, shoot guns, cheapo movie.
It's been such a long time.
Then it's all about how there's this beautiful, perfect society where everyone has like robot sex slaves and this guy's robot breaks down and they don't make those anymore.
And where is this place?
Again, it's Los Angeles. I don't know where you've been living, but. And so Melanie Griffith is the bounty hunter who's going to help this guy go out in the desert to the old robot storehouse and get himself a new sex droid called a Cherry 2000. And it's insane. It's this crazy movie, but it's loads of fun. So and it's all about, you know, a utopia that isn't so great when you look at it.
Basically, it's all out in Vasquez Rock. You can find a sex slave or a sex robot or fight Gorn.
Yeah.
I have been to Vasquez Rocks many times.
It's all happening at Vasquez Rocks.
You're just not looking in the right place.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I can have some honorable mentions, but I kind of already threw Children of Men out there, but I have a feeling we're going to get there in a second. So I'm just to mix it up a little bit, since you guys are hip enough to know about Boy and His Dog and Death Race, I'm going to throw out Silent Running.
I thought about putting this on it, but I figured this would be on your list, so I didn't.
It's just a chance to advocate for Silent Running, you know, which I think if you haven't seen Silent Running, your kids got to get out and see the Silent Running.
I mean, anytime you can have Bruce Dern as your starring
screaming at a robot, get
just
to it.
Bruce Dern,
just
hanging
Bruce
out.
Dern by himself on an aircraft carrier that's being decommissioned with robots. It's, you know, this. The dystopia of it, you know, and how many opportunities do you get? One.
Yeah.
So, you know, grab it while you can. The dystopia of it is we never see the dystopia, which is really the utopia, which is Earth is perfect and wonderful and it's always, you know, everything is fantastic. And they've made that possible by eliminating all natural biology completely. And it's all one big terraformed whatever it is that you never see in the movie, because the whole movie takes place in space where the last actual ecosystems are being maintained for reasons that no one really can remember why anymore. So it's all about how, you know, Bruce Dern is the last eco-hippie who basically still cares about the forests, and the rest of these guys are just like, what do we even need these forests for anymore? We don't need these things anymore. So it's all about the day that they're told to deactivate the forest and come home. And it's a ridiculous premise. It's a magic bean that's hard to swallow. It's crazy. But once you get past that, it's a really amazing, amazing movie. And also, just if you, you know, to look at it, you have to look at it in context, because the movie was made in 1975, I believe. You're right, 1972. Yeah. So it predates Star Wars by 5 years and has, you know, almost as good. The only thing is Doug Trumbull, who was the director of it, first time he ever directed anything. Yeah. Doug Trumbull was and remains a big fan of front projection. So a lot of the, instead of blue screen, he said, "Not screw blue screen, we like front projection. Front projection, you get it in camera, but everything's just a little soft and a little dim as opposed to blue screen. But it was cheaper because he had a low budget. So, but the model work, a lot of people went on to work on Star Wars after doing Silent Running, and you can totally tell by looking at it because the model work is just as seamless as you know as anything being done today. And the drones are fast. As when I was a kid, the drones were the most amazing thing ever. And you know, R2-D2 absolutely owes a debt to the drones, which is just fascinating to watch, and even more fascinating to know how they did those drones. But
I don't think I've seen this movie since I was a kid. It's been a really long time.
Yeah,
I
me too. Re-watch it. Me too. I remember my dad owning it on VHS.
You have to kind of get past the Joan Baez music, but there's a lot of good stuff in that movie.
Also, Douglas. Trumbull, he directed the Back to the Future, The Ride, the video stuff. So
Doug Trumbull's one of the original.
Which Trey, by the way, is personally responsible for tearing down piece by piece.
I helped replace it with The Simpsons Ride. Well,
I know.
They made
him, right?
They made me.
I still haven't forgiven him.
I stole some DeLorean parts. Does that help?
Ooh.
Really?
Doug Trumbull worked on 2001. He was one of the original famous effects people back when there were only three of them. So it was pretty easy to be famous.
One of three.
But, the other bit of wacky trivia was Silent Running. Was made when Universal had this crazy idea of letting young kids who, had these weird ideas make movies as long as they only cost $1 million.
Only
$1 million. I know. Isn't it amazing that 30 years later, Universal is trying this crazy new theory of letting people make movies as long as they only spend $1 million. They did that in 1972 as well. I don't think even all five of the movies that they greenlit even ever necessarily got finished. But one of them was Silent Running, and another one was American Graffiti.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. Not a, that, and that's a dystopian future.
Dystopian past.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm gonna go with, because we'll probably hear some other names, and I'll go, and that's good too, but I'll throw Silent Running out as my number
one. And we'll also come back to your honorable mentions. I want to hear the rest of your list. Brian, right. your recap and your number one.
My recap is They Live at number 5, Idiocracy at number 4, Demolition Man at number 3, and Metropolis at number 2. And I did have Children of Man as my number 1, but if somebody else is going to do it, I'd like to throw in a wild...
Final answer?
Not be my final answer, mm-hmm. since we already opened up on the Star Trek talk.
Oh.
I'm going to throw out Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, as an example of a dystopian film. And to continue this conversation in the sense that, Star Trek, especially under Gene Roddenberry, was straightforward, and here's a utopia. And from a dramatic standpoint, not necessarily always the most interesting. But what is really interesting is when some other writers or producers would get their hands on the franchise and kind of do their own take. And Star Trek VI is definitely the best example within the film part of that franchise, where there is you've got your perfect Federation society where everybody is perfect supposedly, and yet Captain Kirk is still a racist, and there's still this conspiracy to sabotage the peace process with the Klingons, and you literally have Federation and Starfleet members conspiring with each other and with the Klingons to sabotage the peace process because they don't want a genuine utopia. They're as flawed and scared for this new future that as we might be today or as we are today. And when it comes to Undiscovered Country is an allegory for the fall of the Soviet Union, and it's that same kind of, well, if they're not the bad guys anymore, then How can I know that I'm the good guy?
And it's who's James Bond gonna fight now?
Exactly.
How do we justify our exorbitant military expenditures?
Exactly. So going back to what I was saying before, that the purpose of this dystopian genre is to go, okay, this is not how to do it. I think the real strength of the genre is when you make a really strong case for what a utopian society could be, and then you really legitimately test that in a real way. That creates real conflict. So, as somebody who's a huge Star Trek fan and who believes in the utopian concept, I think Star Trek VI is a great test of, like, really taking a genuine concept, like, not straw-manning the idea of utopian. I'm surprised Logan's Run hasn't been on anybody's list.
It's just a bad movie.
But, okay.
It's not very good.
All right. Yeah. But, a lot of dystopian movies, the utopias that they set up are kind of straw-man utopias.
Yeah, well, I think Logan's Run is like everyone dies at 30. It's like, well, okay, that's kind of pulpy and silly, but it's not exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know,
but
a deep thought.
In the case of Star Trek VI, at least the original creator of the franchise was legitimately setting it up as best as, you know, in his mind he could. And then somebody else came along and went, okay, this is how you would really break it and bend it. And I think they do it really well. It's my personal favorite Star Trek movie. And I think it's the most mature of the franchise.
Which one, where does, is this still the old
crew? Wasn't that the last of the original?
It's the last of the old cast, yeah.
It's the one that ends with the signatures?
Yeah, that's one. So yeah, the premise is basically the Klingons, their moon blows up, so they have no energy production anymore. So they basically have to make peace or they'll go extinct. And so the movie is about setting up this peace process between the two, but as you find out through the course of the movie, there are forces behind the scenes working to sabotage that peace. And it's actually more exciting than that just made it sound, I promise.
It's a lot of diplomatic negotiations.
Yeah. Well, there's an assassination, and Kirk and McCoy get on trial, and they have to escape prison, and there's space battles. There's all of that stuff, too. But
it's one of the good ones.
That's the important part. It is one of the good ones. It's my personal favorite.
It's an odd-numbered one. So
even-numbered one.
That's right. It's an even-numbered one. Yeah. So. I was going to say, wait, that doesn't make sense. Even-numbered makes sense.
All right. So is this what's next after? So this is your favorite one.
Right.
What's your second favorite?
Of Star Trek movies?
Yeah, just curious.
Wrath of Khan.
Okay. Checking. I was gonna blacklist you. Sorry.
You got a search for Spock.
Yeah. Is the correct answer.
Yeah. So Jenny, recapping your number one.
All right. So my number 5 was Red Dawn. 4 was Pleasantville. 3 was Blade Runner. 2 was Battle Royale. And my number 1 is WALL-E.
Oh, look at you! Dude.
I see what you did there.
Went a little different. Yeah.
You're like animation, bitches.
Wait, no, I don't understand. I want that.
I know.
I want a hovercraft that just takes everywhere.
Yeah. Where's my milkshake?
Yeah.
Really?
I feel like WALL-E is very close to what it could be like for us in the future. Yeah. With all the trash all over the place. I'm about to get really economic on you guys.
Yeah.
But not economic.
Do it.
Anyways.
Ecological.
Ecological. The other ECO.
So my silent running not so crazy after all.
So. All right. You okay?
Yeah, sorry. I banged my head into the mic.
I just love it. I don't love the idea, but I love the way that they dealt with it. It was really interesting. WALL-E in general is interesting as a robot, but then the whole part where we see where all the humans are now is even more interesting, how they're all just like riding around in these chair things and drinking, not even food, just drinking their food out of straws. Like it's really interesting. I love it. It's one of my favorite Pixars for sure.
I love the first half, which is just stillness.
And no talking at all.
But there's musical stuff.
Yeah, but once it takes me like somewhere, like I'm like, there is
a definite split in that movie.
Yeah.
There's a part A and a part B.
Yeah.
I love both, but I'm still not sure that I love both together.
No, I don't. I don't like the movie.
Really? Itself. You're not a fan of WALL-E?
No.
It is one of my more favorite. It is one of my preferred Pixar movies. But like I said, I love both of them individually. I just don't know if they come together in a great way.
It's for me, the shift was bumpy. Like, whoa, okay, now it's this, you know. And I do like the first half more than the second half, but I don't hate the movie as a whole.
Because it's really what we were talking about just 5 minutes ago. Like, one half is post-apocalyptic and the other half is dystopian. And it's actually kind of like the problem with Up. Up is the problem with Up is that it's two different genres stitched together kind of awkwardly.
Yeah.
And WALL-E has, to a lesser extent, in my opinion, but it still is kind of the same category of problem.
But I think it's a great movie, and as other people have said that I would agree that the first half of WALL-E is one of the best science fiction movies made in the past decade or more.
Yeah,
love stories.
At least we can agree on that. You know, whether you agree with the tonal shift and the plot shift and the midpoint, the first half is a freaking masterpiece. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, so. Very cool. I like that. You look cute, just fucking surprising us with fucking WALL-E.
Rocking the Pleasantville, and then boom, WALL-E, 1-2 punch there.
Yeah. My recap is my number 5 was a tie between Fahrenheit 451 and Equilibrium, 4 Battle Royale, 3 RoboCop, 2 Death Race 2000, and my number 1, surprise, surprise, Children of Men.
Yeah. I did not see that coming.
Had to be in there somewhere.
Yeah. Did not see that coming.
I love this. God. This is like one of my top five favorite movies of like all time.
How many times have you had this on your...
Maybe only once, but I always talk about it.
Okay.
I talk about it a lot.
I not only love this director.
I'm saving it for when we do movies about London.
Yeah. the only movie that he's made that wasn't a big fan of, just because I'm not a big fan of that series, is Harry Potter. Yeah, Azkaban.
And it's one of the better Potters.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I agree with that. For me, it's one of the better Potters. Yeah, yeah. I agree that it's one of the most, of all the Potter movies, I enjoy that the best. There's time travel going on in that movie.
Yeah, funny. How about that?
And I love every movie this guy's made, Alfonso Cuarón. And should we talk about this? It's one of my favorites.
Yeah. We bumped it off my list because you're like, oh, Children of Men. Okay, fine.
It's one of
it's amazing movie. It's an amazing movie.
It's one of the most recent and probably the last movies where I walked into the theater and I walked out just completely like blown away. Where you're like. Legitimately, I went to see it with my roommate at the time. I was in living in Florida. We were both just like, "What?
Life will never be the same."
It's like, you know, really truly great cinema experiences have that quality where the world just looks different when you walk out of the theater.
Yeah,
and Children of Men absolutely had that quality for me. Like the world just looked different when I walked out.
Yeah, and you could definitely. You know, when you talk to people about it and you're like, so what's so the end? Is it hopeful or is it, you know? Yeah. I'm like, you could definitely tell what kind of person they are by their answer. You know? Sure. I won't ask in this episode.
Thank you.
Because I want the mystery. But just from like the movie. From the beginning, like, it's funny, this movie came out on limited release, like in New York and LA on Christmas Day. And I remember, I don't spend Christmas with my family, I spend Christmas Eve with my family. So I'm like, my friend and I were like, let's go see Children of Men. We love Alfonso Cuarón. Let's go see it. And it's the first time where I think we got out of the movie and we're like, we got to go back and see it again. We got to just, we got to go back.
Almost the same thing. I had the benefit, I was working at a movie theater at the time. I went in, saw it, I saw the first showing. Mm-hmm. I was like, that was amazing. I went home, I got the soundtrack and the score. I went to the bookstore, I got the book. And then I went back to the theater and watched it.
You got a shirt that said Children
of Men. Yeah, I made one.
Did you get the Children of Men foam hands?
Yeah. I took number one. I took the poster down from the hallway, and I took it to my screen printer friend. Is like, I need you to make this a t-shirt. Make Clive Owen's face and a baby. Yeah.
And the feety pajamas, the whole thing. Yeah. All right, nice.
And yeah, I loved it.
Just this movie from like the opening scene where like he's getting coffee and it comes out, and it's all one take. Yeah. Yeah. And the explosion... It just kind of like set the tone where like the sound system in the theater I saw at was like amazing. And you hear that ringing in your ear and you actually hear it. And you're like, wow, like what the fuck is the rest of this movie? Because they just blew me away, literally. It was amazing. Well acted by everyone. Again, Joel Edgerfor as... I won't give spoilers because this is a movie that if you haven't seen I don't want to give you any spoilers because you should enjoy it.
Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
No. I like how
you
that
didn't do the serious voice when it gets very serious indeed.
it's funny if you're a fan of Sons of Anarchy.
It's emotional.
If you're a fan of Sons of Anarchy, there's a really, and this is why I like this actor.
Charlie Hunnam with dreads.
he you can't recognize him. You're like, who the hell is this kid?
Which actor?
Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's in Sons of Anarchy. And
he's in Abandon.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Undeclared.
Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Pacific Rim.
Yeah. Wow. He's the lead in Pacific Rim.
Who is he in Children of Men?
He plays white dreadlock freedom fighter guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Danny Houston is really good in this.
And
that like lunch scene with him and the son, and it's funny. I later found out that's a guy from like the WB show, whatever that show is called.
Teenage Love.
Yeah, but he was really good. He blew me kind of away. Like, it was really.
Have
good.
Either of you read the book?
No, actually,
it's totally different.
That's right here.
Yeah. So I'm sorry if I'm spoiling the book. But I don't care.
Do that.
About people who haven't read the book.
Yeah,
sorry, this is not that great. But in the book, Danny Houston's character is the bad guy.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And like, it's just totally whole different can of worms that they get into. But like, it's them running away from the government, and like the Danny Houston character is trying to get the baby.
Oh wow!
So different though.
For those who haven't seen it, just a quick synopsis. It's basically in the future. Women have, for some reason, they can't have children anymore.
But in the book, isn't it the fact they don't actually go into it in the movie at all? But it's that the men have become infertile is the idea.
Isn't I don't book? Remember that from the book.
This is one of the things
that I wish they had in the movie that was in the book is there's this whole half a chapter where he's talking about the way that people are coping with their inability to have children, and they all have these life-size dolls that they carry around. I'm like, that would have been badass and creepy as hell.
The movie does great things though. Like, everyone has a pet. Yeah. He's got a little pet. Mm-hmm. And all the, what I love are the billboards that talk about, you know, about preventing aging and getting plastic surgery and everything. Yeah. So everyone's trying to look young.
And the quietest.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that there's, you know, ritualized suicide. Yeah. Like, or you can just kill yourself. We can give you that too.
We allow that now.
Well, and just the cages of refugees.
Yeah. That's tough. Ugh.
Yeah.
The Fugees.
Fugees.
And there's a really infamous shot at the end. Which is one of my favorite shots in cinema. Like, that one long take is just so
going into the building. That one,
yeah, the attack in the building. The driving one is the one that blows me away the most. Just because knowing how they did it behind the scenes, the links they went to get that shot.
Yeah.
But the whole there's an entire what Saving Private Ryan does in the first 20 minutes they do in one take.
Yep. In one shot, one take. I mean,
you're making me want to watch this right now.
I know.
It's great.
I'm going to watch it after this. I'm not going
to lie. Put it on right now.
But yeah, that is my number one, Children of Men, Alfonso Cuarón.
So, in addition to make me want to watch Children of Men right now, you're also making me really regret what my number one is. Because it is no Children of Men. It's okay. So, remember how I said before that all of my top three had the same rating on IMDb?
Yeah.
So each of these movies had a 6.5.
Wow. I was gonna say, boy and his dog. Yeah, not below.
Just to set that, let you know where we're at. So it's from 1987, and it's The Running Man.
Oh, okay.
I love The Running Man. Yeah. But it's not Children of Men.
It's not Children of Men.
Great double feature.
Yeah. Yeah. I love this movie.
I love this movie. I think it might have come up during 80s action, but it wasn't actually on my list. But I love this movie so much. This was like my go-to Schwarzenegger movie.
Me too.
I think
it is classic Schwarzenegger.
This and Predator were like my go-to.
I watched Predator a lot, but we've had this talk also about where I was the weird kid who I always liked Predator 2 better. So Predator 2 was my go-to for VHS.
That is weird. I don't hate Predator 2. I don't think I like Predator the original better, but I think Predator 2 is fun.
Maybe it's a black thing. I'm just like Danny Glover. I'm going to go Danny Glover over.
There's a lot I like about it. I just think the original Predator is amazing.
It's an easy trump card. I can just bring it up anytime. It's like, oh yeah, bam.
So like Danny Glover, huh?
Yeah.
Have you heard of the Emancipation Proclamation?
But I like the Predator. He's black, right?
Yeah.
He is.
He's got dreads.
He is.
Yeah.
The actor, too. The actor, too, playing him.
After Van Damme got fired.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Van Damme's was like 5'4".
Yeah.
It wasn't that.
Van Damme was the Predator?
Yeah.
He was fired. I used to work.
I didn't know that.
When I worked for, and Steve Johnson did the original Predator, which also got thrown out. The original Predator suit that Van Damme was going to wear.
It looked like a squid. Like a weird squid head.
A squid crossed with a giraffe.
I worked for Steve Johnson, who was the guy who made that. And his version of why that debacle happened is, you know, he has his own version of that. John McTiernan is, you know, famously not easy to work for. That's why he's in prison right now. But anyway, he has a whole story about Jean-Claude Van Damme, who was not the famous Jean-Claude Van Damme at the time. No. And he was like, they got some stunt guy who was like French or something. He didn't know when he's telling the story. He didn't know who this guy was.
Oh, he's doing the splits?
Yeah. He's like, he's a real
keeps doing a helicopter kick over
everybody. He's a real pain in the ass. The story also goes that, you know, when they did the Predator vision, which is that whole, you know, optical effect of the invisibility thing, they would, you know, he would wear a red suit so they could do the optical effect. And apparently Van Damme thought that was the Predator. He's like, I am just all a red man? That's what I am? He's like, no, you're a monster, but this is a whole other thing. You know, so apparently it had to be explained to him that
maybe
no,
his English wasn't very
a red
good
leotard
yet.
Is yeah. not the monster. That's not what you're doing right now.
Well, I heard he kept passing out also.
That
was part of the
true.
Problem why he got fired.
Pretty brutal.
He kept passing out in the suit.
We kept going, eh, in the suit. Yeah. And he's like, you can't do that, Van Damme. You got to just be quiet, dude. We'll add the voices later.
talk about a troubled production. Predator is definitely one of them.
Oh, but yeah.
The end result is great.
Yeah,
but Running Man.
Now Running Man.
I just love the crazy, over the top totalitarian state where the TV is the god and like everything is kind of at the whim of this television host who has all the power for some reason.
I always love it when the movies make TV the bad guy.
Yeah,
it's like
Well, I mean, they've had that out for him for a while now.
Oh yeah, I mean, since TV was first around, movies would be like TV sucks and I just find it very funny because it's just this complete.
You might want to check out The President's Analyst, which is a 60s movie where the bad guy is the phone company. Which is good because it's this giant monopoly that controls all communication at the time.
Right.
And so it's this crazy satirical film about the president's analyst. His little president goes to a psychiatrist and all the other governments want to kidnap him because he knows the president's secrets. So it's this crazy, wacky Cold War comedy, but the ultimate bad guy is not any government, it's the phone company.
the cable company is the bad guy. Yeah. But this Running Man, badass.
Great.
I always wanted that jumpsuit just to wear around like school when I was a kid. I'm like, I want to go to school in the Running Man uniform.
Run!
I don't know. I feel like it's only flattering on a few people. Like, didn't really do a lot for Yafet Kodo.
If you're Schwarzenegger, pull that
did
off.
Did not work for Yafet Kodo at all. Yeah. And the nerdy guy.
Oh, who's the nerdy guy?
It was like, on the girl. Wasn't it Maria Cachillo Alonso? Or who was
she
worked for her. It
she
worked
was
for
right.
her in Schwarzenegger. Yeah. But Yafet Kodo couldn't really pull it off.
Isn't Tom Noonan in this too? Wasn't he? No,
I think
he
would be surprised if
Jim Brown is in it. He's is Fireball. Jesse Ventura is in it.
Yeah, there you go.
And Mick Fleetwood is in this movie?
That's right.
But Richard Dawson is
Damon
Killian.
I don't think that movie would have been what it was if they hadn't managed to get Richard Dawson.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. And one of the best Schwarzenegger I'll Be Back moments.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, a lot of fun. Like, another thing that's very different from the book.
Oh, boy. Quite a bit, yeah.
It's Richard Bachman book.
Yeah, they took the title.
Oh, wow. I thought it was the Richard K. Dick book.
No, it's Richard.
No, it's a Bachman.
Oh, wow.
It's one of the Bachman books.
A lot different.
Yeah.
And I would really like to see a movie of the actual book. But I would also kind of like to see a remake of the Schwarzenegger version.
Yeah, me too.
So we can somehow get dueling Running Man movies coming out. That'd be great.
One could be called Running Man. The other one is The Running Man.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Very cool. I like that you put it number one. It's kind of a fun pick. I mean,
this list was, I was so kind of all over the place. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I just knew that I wanted to talk about something that I hadn't talked about before.
Yeah. Very cool. Fair enough.
Thus Firepower.
Yeah. Well,
Firepower. Yeah. I'm intrigued by Firepower.
I don't even know if that movie's out on DVD.
I know.
If it's
might
not,
be a VHS
I might have to
jump.
Go back down to my parents' house and find our VHS copy and bring that up for movie night here.
Yeah. Trey, you have any honorable mentions on your list?
I had some one that was kind of back and forth on that you know, I was in the list and I was like, it didn't hold up. I saw it again recently. It didn't hold up quite as well as I'd hoped, although it still, I think, is an amazing movie. I like Brazil a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's in somewhere in the list, but I like Brazil a lot. And my other honorable mention is a movie that I really do admire quite a bit, and that's V for Vendetta. I like V for Vendetta quite a bit.
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah. I think it's really underrated. Like,
I think it did okay at the time. I think it's really well made. It's, I think a lot of people, you know, the people who are like comic purists were like, hey, it's different than the comic, you know, and all that. But I don't know the comic, so I don't have that problem.
Yeah, I never read that comic, so. Yeah,
exactly.
I enjoyed it.
I was like, wow, this is, you know, it's a crazy movie, but it's really quite fun, I think.
I don't even think it's comic pure, like being pure to the comic. I don't know. There's just something about Alan Moore adaptations where it's just like, you're not Alan Moore. I can't.
Yeah, it's tough.
I drank the Alan Moore Kool-Aid.
There's always that. You're not a fan of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? LXG?
What do you think of Watchmen as an adaptation? You don't like it?
No. Hmm. I don't like Zack Snyder. I just think there were so many. I had so many problems with that movie. I thought the credit sequence was great.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Opening credit. Everyone agrees on that.
The opening credit sequence was amazing.
Everyone in the world loves
all
that
downhill
credit.
From there.
It's and the one like thing just, that's not from the book, too.
That's like that was the one perfect music cue for me. But then, like the music cues killed me in that movie. Yeah. And I don't know, just it was just kind of well shit I, stacked upon shit.
I have to. I will have to say it in the movie's defense that the end credits the. My Chemical Romance cover of Desolation Row is way up on my playlist. I play it all the time myself.
I don't like that. No.
I'm sorry.
Does anybody
I'm
else
offended
have?
When people ask when I've had people say, "Oh, isn't Gerard Butler or what's his name? Not Gerard Butler. Gerard Way." They say, "Oh yeah, he's someone so oh, he's Billy Corgan." So I'm like, "Fuck you. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard." Go to fucking hell.
Anybody else have honorable mentions before we sign off?
Yeah, like I have Brazil, Strange Days on mine. Clockwork Orange, I think.
Yep.
Needs to at least
that
get
was
mentioned.
On my list.
And then a favorite of ours over at Down in Front, Surrogates.
Ah, Surrogates.
No, that's not an actual no, honorable mention.
No, you said it. It counts.
It's dishonorable mention.
Surrogates is... certainly in the dystopian genre, and one of my candidates for biggest missed opportunities of all time.
That's a tie, right? For wait, did you say In Time yet?
In Time.
In Time.
Oh, wow. I haven't seen In Time.
Oh, my God. In Time, boy.
But yeah.
I did see that just recently. Damn.
Also, I'll just throw out real quick a Final Cut. I don't even know if it would qualify as dystopian.
I'm keeping to see that.
Robin Williams?
Yeah, Robin Williams. I think like late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah. Not a great movie, but one that... I think just like slipped by and is completely forgotten, and I don't think deserves the level of obscurity that it has. It's, again, it's not a great movie, but it's got some really interesting ideas going on in it.
I dug what Ron Williams was doing in those couple of years. Like he did that in 1 Hour Photo, which I really loved.
Yeah.
I was getting those two movies confused. Yeah, yeah. I keep thinking one is the other one.
1 Hour Photo is really great if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
It's a great like thriller.
1 Hour Photo is definitely one that got left behind unfairly, I think.
Yeah. And a great director, Mark Romanek.
Yeah.
Jenny, any honorable mentions for you?
Not really.
No. You're like, I left it on the table, guys.
That's right.
I played with my heart.
Held nothing back.
The only thing I have is Total Recall.
Oh, okay.
So that's it. Adam, anything else?
No. Not really.
No.
I think it was stuff that was more post-apocalyptic that just kind of kept wanting to be on this list. But
Trying to get in.
I was like, no, you're not. I'll save you for
later. Children of Men is on your list. No, shut up. Get out. Yeah. That's different.
It's not the same. You don't understand.
So before we sign off, where can people follow you guys? On Twitter, Facebook? Where are you guys at?
That's an excellent question. I honestly don't know the answer to that question right now.
The other podcast? We don't know yet.
Well, okay. I mean, you can follow me personally at Brian Finifter on Twitter. Yeah. BrianFinifter.
We'll throw a shout out once you guys change your name. We'll figure that out.
Yeah, please. Because literally, I think we finally officially settled
like earlier
on our new
today
name
on email. We're
today.
Like, guys, we have to kind
We've
of decide.
Because the story is we had Down in Front, but we had never trademarked it, and just a few weeks ago, apparently some guy with the trademark for Down in Front came out of the woodwork
found
and
found out we existed.
Yeah, hey, that's ours, and we would like that back, please. So as part of our working out a deal with him, we went, okay, can you give us 30 days to switch over? And I think we're on like day 22 of that. So.
I think like 2nd of March or something.
Yeah, 2nd of May.
Vacate the premises.
So, yeah, literally, we're not exactly sure where we're going to land quite yet. But, yeah, for the next several days, downinfront.net.
Yeah, depending on when this episode comes out.
Yeah.
And, Trey, are you on Twitter?
I am. Trey Stokes. Pretty easy to find there.
Done. Easy.
TREYSTOKES. I don't hide my identity. I'm not ashamed to be who I am on Twitter.
Yeah, it's funny because...
It's on Facebook that I hide my identity.
I was just talking to somebody. We've met a couple people off of Twitter, like bloggers and critics and stuff, but you always have to like some people don't use a real name; they use like a weird name. So you have to introduce yourself with your real name, like, "Hey, I'm blah blah blah."
Yeah,
but I'm also this person on Twitter. You have to reveal your Twitter identity.
Also, Boba Fett 97. Yeah. Oh, we're best Boba of friends. Fett. I didn't even realize
you're my soulmate.
Trey, Mike, Teague, and a bunch of other our friends, that's how we originally kind of know each other, is from one specific filmmaking online message board. And so, yeah.
Where no one had a real name.
Yeah, none of us used our... Except, well, Mike sort of.
Mike did. Kind of.
Yeah, halfway.
Well, his handle became his name. That's what happened.
Yeah.
He went the other way.
But, so, yeah, exactly what you're talking about is the process that all of us went through when we first, like...
Like, oh, I do know you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's how Twitter is now, I feel.
Yeah.
You can find the podcast at The Film Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERES.
I'm at Jhenigh, JHENEIGH.
I'm at An Adam Scott, AN_Adam Scott.
There you go. And
no one's congratulating him on my winning the PGA
or
the Masters.
You're so good.
I know. You were great.
Won the Masters. That was you.
I got my green jacket.
That was awesome.
Wow.
Congratulations
green
to
looks
Adam
really
Scott.
Good on you, I bet.
You're also really good on Parks and Rec.
Thank you.
Is that Party Down movie happening?
I'm not really at liberty to talk about that.
Not right now.
Will you say the line? Will you say the line?
Say the line.
Are we having fun yet?
No,
all right.
I'm not
until next time, have a good week.